From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. This week's movie is The Exorcist, just in time for Halloween. My name is Serge Dalpierre. We have here too
Tim McMillan
and
Heidi Hilliker.
Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
And before we get started, our cue point for The Exorcist is, okay, this is a little tricky, so we're going to give you just a tiny bit of extra time. It's as the A William Friedkin Film credit comes up, because that's the credit following the Warner Brothers logo, and actually the version that we're looking at is the, Tim, this is the digitally restored version?
Well, this is the remastered 2010 remastered version of the original theatrical cut.
Nice.
On Blu-ray is what
we're watching.
We're
watching it on Blu-ray, too, which is nice. But I think it's the same thing on SD, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. So you can get it on SD, Blu-ray. But anyway, probably not significantly different in terms of length or anything, but this is just what the beginning's like. So once, go ahead and try and cue that up. Meanwhile, we're going to talk a little bit about the first times we've seen The Exorcist. But first, a little Exorcist pop quiz. I have three questions about The Exorcist. Ooh. I've been waiting for a long time for this. Okay, so question number one is, what is the name of Reagan's imaginary friend?
Oh, my gosh.
It's General Goodbye?
Oh,
or... Our private greetings.
We're giving you clues.
Can I have a hint? Can you narrow it down a little bit? You know.
There's a chapter in the book with this name, I think, if I recall correctly.
Captain Crunch.
Have you ever read the book? The book's pretty good.
I've never read the book.
Oh yeah, I read the book after I saw the movie.
There's a chapter in the book with his name.
It's okay.
Is it a boy name or a girl name?
It's a boy name. Well, I guess it could be a girl name. It could likely be a boy name. Okay, it's a name of, there is a, how do we call it? Oh, I'm just going to tell you.
Just tell us.
Captain Howdy.
Oh, yeah, Captain Howdy. That was right on the tip of my tongue, Serge.
Come on, this is The Exorcist. Yeah, I know this stuff. Okay, so what was the actual name of the demon possessing Reagan?
Oh, I don't get it. I know it like phonetically. It's like not Joey Zuzu. I remember that. Oops.
Pazuzu. Okay. And this one I know, Tim, you're going to get, so you got to give Heidi a bit of a chance.
Okay.
Who did the voice of, well, I mean, obviously Linda Blair played, you know, Reagan, but who did the voice of the demon?
Oh, I have no idea.
Tim.
Brenda Vaccaro. Suzanne Plachet.
Oh, that's so bad.
No, Mercedes McCambridge.
Whoa, jinx. What is that, like Pinch Poke, owe you a Coke or something?
Yeah, owe me a Coke, that's right. So anyway.
And who is that?
Mercedes McCambridge.
She was a very well-known actress, mainly in the 50s.
Okay.
Into the 60s.
And how did Friedkin find her?
I have no idea.
I know.
It's like one of those weird things, like Deborah Winger doing the voice for E.T. It's like,
yeah,
what?
It's so strange.
What?
Yeah, Deborah Winger did the voice for E.T.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe Sarah doesn't know that.
Oh, man. We should have
this is a monumental moment.
I thought it was an old lady somewhere out in the Midwest.
No. It's a monumental moment to you listeners out there that Sarah didn't
know. No, that's
from
the Andromeda Strain. The voice. Remember when James Olsen was asking the voice? Remember,
yeah.
he's getting all, like, he's going through the different levels, and he's asking, you know, he's talking to the woman, whatever.
Who
was the voice.
That voice?
Apparently, in the story, it's someone not in the Midwest. Woman is like 68 or 70 years old.
But as far as, yeah, Exorcist, Mercedes McCambridge, or McCambridge, I guess it's McCambridge.
McCambridge.
Yeah, she was in Johnny Guitar with Joan Crawford, mm-hmm. and she was very well-known, intense actress. And she was very petite,
very small
in stature, very, but boy, she could
hold
lay it
on. Holds a demon voice deep mm-hmm. inside, huh?
Can you believe what to be like, you know, those sessions when she's doing those tracks?
Oh, when she was saying what she was saying, holy crap. Okay, well.
Well, I failed the quiz, but I learned something.
You see,
there's
one
important.
More question. We don't think of it as failure. We think of it as learning something, exactly. Mm-hmm. There are only three questions. Do you have another one?
No, not at all.
Okay, so we're fine. Okay, so first times. Heidi, so you were 4 years old? When you saw this one?
No, I think I was a little bit older when I saw this, you know. I might have been, I think, in maybe in middle school, early high school. A good friend of mine, Jessica, she grew up Catholic, and she's the one who brought the film to me, saying that it was the scariest movie she'd ever seen. Nothing had ever frightened her more, and she really wanted to share that with me. good friend.
Wow.
And we watched it together in her basement.
Were there windows in the basement?
No, it's like one of those. It's like a Michigan dark. Basement, so there's like those little teeny slit windows sometimes at the very top of the wall.
Was it at night? Was it cold?
It was definitely cold. It was dank.
Oh, no.
You know, the perfect. That's the perfect situation. A Michigan basement is a great place to watch a horror film. If anybody, you know, wants to go and travel there and try that out, I highly suggest it. It's a little creepy. There'll usually be some spiders. But I did think it was very frightening the first time I saw it. I've never felt any other way about it, actually. And, you know, some horror movies I watched when I was younger, as I've gotten older, they've lost a little bit of that, you know, that freak factor. But yeah. I think that this movie's always really held up as far as what is scary about it.
Right. Tim?
Well, I saw it for the first time actually on a television broadcast, and they pumped it up for like 2 weeks. The Exorcist coming to television.
Oh.
You're going to see this, yes, on public television. It's coming into your home, The Exorcist. Check it out. And of course, you know, I had all the creepy phobia, creepy reputation built into me around the film, as I was just like, oh, The Exorcist, because I've always heard it's the most horrific experience known to mankind. So what do you do with that? So I said, TV, So I watched bits and pieces of the television broadcast, which was edited beyond belief.
Yeah, right. Sure.
It was like, you know, major chunks ripped out.
How long was that movie?
It was like
45 minutes.
No, actually, The Exorcist, when you really look at the film, it's 40 minutes before anything really happens.
Oh, it's quite
That's
a while,
That's the
yeah.
secret of the film.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you really have tremendous amounts of footage. That's what people don't understand, is the shock factors are compared to the actual running time of the film.
Right.
It's not as much as you would think.
Oh, we'll talk about more about that.
Anyway, but then I really saw the film completely. Theatrically, I saw it projected on the re-release, like in 2000, where they had the extended director's cut or whatever. They're hyping that as the next big thing to check out on the film. So that's when I sat down in the theater and watched it and took it all in. So that was recently, so I really held off a long time before seeing it.
And your reaction to it?
I think, you know, it was mythical. It just became mythic of how incredibly horrific it must be in my mind. So when I actually saw it, I was like, okay.
It didn't,
because my whole life it was, you know, just pumped up beyond.
That's
so how can anything live up to that?
That's the hardest thing. Nothing ever does.
I was incredibly biased
Nothing
against
does,
it.
Yeah.
I had this huge bias.
Right.
So then I was like, wow, that's okay. I get it. I didn't think it would be so non-shocking. All the slow parts, all the character stuff, all that. I didn't think it would be so much of that. I thought it would be nonstop shock for the entire film. So, but then when I just watched it, when the Blu-ray just came out like 2 weeks ago, I sat down and really studied it on my home theater system in 5.1 surround and 100-inch screen and front projected, and wow, it really hit me. It really hit me at that point of what a finely crafted film this is. On a cinematic level, I got to tell you, I think it's one of the most well-directed films I've seen.
Yeah. Well. I was a youngster when this came out, and as I've said many times before, I lived in Quebec, and in Quebec we had the classification system of for all 14 and over and 18 and over. I definitely was not seeing this one because this one was definitely 18 and over, but definitely heard about it. This was the year I think the Sting came out, because the Sting came out, I think, in the spring. This came out, I think, towards Christmas time. So it was like a big Christmas movie, strangely enough. And so I got to hear a lot about it, but there's no chance of seeing it whatsoever. It's not like in the United States where you can go to an R-rated film with your parents. So it just grew in reputation for me. And actually, there was one story going around school, was that basically everyone who saw The Exorcist would die 7 years later.
Yeah, see, that's the type of buzz I'm talking about. How can any movie live up to that?
I know. And so then I was waiting until 7 years later. I'm like, 1980. Okay, are people dying? No, people aren't dying. Okay. Bullshit.
But that's great, though, because for 7 years, you know, everybody who heard that where you were at, they all thought about it a little bit.
I know. It was the kid internet. It was awesome.
I love that.
Back before there was internet. It was just a great story. And, of course, when I saw The Ring, I'm like, that's the Exorcist story. They ripped it off. Okay. It was an awesome story. So I think I saw it in the 80s when films came out on video. And so I don't think it was the first thing, but I was like, okay, let me watch The Exorcist. And I thought it was a finely crafted film. It was the 80s, so it was still close enough to the 70s, and, you know, the aesthetics had changed a little bit. So I really appreciated a lot about it, and I thought it was really cool and scary and everything, and just watched it on videotape. I really would have liked to have seen it in a movie theater, because that would have been great.
Yeah. Audience reaction really makes the film.
Yeah.
Oh, just everything.
And this had the most violent reactions audience-wise of any film that came out.
Yeah, and I forgot. I mean, I'm sure that, I mean, back at the time, I heard about the stories about stuff mm-hmm. that happened and how horrific. And I have vague memories, but I don't have anything specific.
The publicity machine just grabbed onto it with, you know, both hands and used it for all it's worth to promote the film of what it was doing to the audiences.
And I think it had 11 Academy Award nominations. Mm. Won only two, because The Sting swept, well, won a lot of other ones that year, but we'll get to that later.
What were the two? It had to be, did Dick Smith win?
It was Sound. Oh, hang on, let me take a look.
Bam for a second.
Yeah, The Sound actually is incredible. The music, the sound.
The sound design is phenomenal for that time.
It's amazing, you know, and I think a lot of times people take it for granted because it, you know, it's just something you don't pay attention. If sound's done really well, for the most part, you don't really pay attention to it while you're watching a movie. It's affecting you, but you don't pay attention to it.
Right.
Now, if it's really incredible, it's so good that you can't help but notice it a little bit.
Right.
And I think that that's how it plays out in this film. You know, it's another character.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here we go. And then we're going to get going. It won two Academy Awards for Best Sound. That was Robert Knudsen and Christopher Newman.
Good job.
And Best Writing Screenplay based on material from another medium, William Peter Blatty. Other nominations, and that was nominated for Best Actor in a Supporting Role, Jason Miller. Best Actress in a Leading Role, Ellen Burstyn. Best Supporting Actress, Linda Blair. Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Owen Roizman. Owen Roizman rocks. William Friedkin, of course, for Director. He lost out to George Roy Hill for The Sting. Best Film Editing, and, of course, Best Picture.
So they didn't have a makeup category? I'm surprised.
No.
I
think back then they didn't because I mean, the makeup effects
that
were
makes
incredible.
Well, that could make sense as to it took The Exorcist in order to make a makeup category.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you know. Because, I mean, Dick Smith is, you can't, his contribution to this is, cannot be under, you know.
Right. Okay, we're going to get going.
Yay!
So, all right, The Exorcist. Okay, so fingers on the remote, please. We're going to count down 3, 2, 1, play. And then well, you'll hit play, we'll hit play, and we'll be in sync on this thing. So, 3, 2, 1, play. Okay, now it's just hit play. Now there was a slight delay.
A William Friedkin film.
So if you pause it for just like a second, we'll be fine. In fact, I'll call it. The Exorcist just came up right now. And it's going to go to...
And again, already
picture
the sound
comes
is great,
up, yeah.
You know,
picture
starting out in black.
And how many horror films start out and have a sequence like this to kick off a film? This entire sequence, how long is the sequence? 25 minutes or something? No. This is like 15 minutes.
This one's like 15 minutes. Yeah. Just, well, it starts on Max von Sydow's character. Mm-hmm. And we just follow him. And this is basically takes place, I don't know if they shot it there, but takes place in Iraq.
Wow, it looks really good.
It was location, I believe, yes. It's true. I don't know if it is Iraq compared to another desert.
Wow. The remastering on this is like shockingly good.
Right, you know, Heidi?
Look at that. Look at that detail.
Looks like it was shot yesterday, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does. It looks new.
This is a 37-year-old film. And on so many levels, for it to be a 37-year-old film is just mind-blowing. It is so... To think that the horror that is in this, the approach they took for 37 years ago, my gosh, a mainstream big studio film? I don't know how this thing got by.
No. Well, The Exorcist was a big bestseller at the time, too. I mean, that's how it happened.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it already had major hype.
Right. It started
it
like that.
It's a novel.
Getting the movie made became a whole thing.
Well, and it's a lot more than just like a big blockbuster. It's a lot more than just a horror film. Yes, that's a word. Film. I'm so scared I can't talk.
We got a lot more movie to go, Heidi. You better get a hold of yourself.
Oh, no. But it is. You know, it's a very dynamic film. If it was just a horror film, if it was just a film based off of a book, if it was just one type of a movie, it wouldn't have been nominated for so many awards.
That's a great shot. I like how he just ran up and they had the shot right between them.
And what I can say is the entire beginning. I mean, it's completely cinematic.
Oh, yeah. Right.
This is visual. It's just wonderful. It's all composition and visual and storytelling without dialogue.
Yep.
And I love films that just let you sit and watch.
Also, what I love about this scene is that, I mean, if you watch everyone here in terms of, you see everyone's work and how they've coordinated all that. I mean, that's definitely AD work, but it's very mm-hmm. detailed AD, director AD work, coordinating all the background. But also in terms of the sound. I mean, you have the sound of the picking and all that, because this is where the sound just becomes...
Your environment. It creates your environment beautifully.
I mean, the film was designed in a way to use the sound to affect you subtly in a very psychological way. And to be part of the soundtrack, because there isn't that much music in this. We've discussed this.
That's a huge secret to the film's success, actually, is the spotting. It has so many sequences without music, where most pictures would have just hit you over the head with
and
score
again,
to scare
especially,
you.
Yeah, especially horror-type films. That was like the classic... you know, that was the classic scenario. You know, you have like the buildup of the music and then
it's
it gets
theatrical.
Really loud.
And even though you're scared, it has a theatrical sense to it. So it's not hitting you as reality. This is more of a documentary style.
Yeah.
I mean, the documentary style flavor to this film is what makes it work so well.
Right.
It just feels authentic. Even like, and what going back to the dig, you know, like the coordination of the dig, the sound of the picking, it feels authentic. Like you're really on a dig site.
Only here now, he brings in the music.
And you have this unsettling hum.
Exactly. And it just cuts right out. Very effective use.
And you're talking about AD work. What I find in this film, and my biggest compliment I can give to a film, is that I believe it when I believe something.
Yep.
And what I find in The Exorcist is I believe it. No matter what scene is happening, whether you're in the apartment of the priest's mother, whether you're on this dig site, whether... you're on the film set with Ellen Burstyn when she's shooting her movie as her profession, what she does. I believe the environment. It's beautifully done. Mm-hmm. Each beautifully realized. I don't think this is fake. This is Hollywood. This is a set. This is, you know, production design going on. It smells. It tastes. It has a texture. It all reads as real life environments. And that's what I think really sells the film.
Oh, it contributes. And, of course, you have Max von Sydow, who was not nominated for Academy Award, but who is awesome. I mean, because he's in so little of the film, too.
But he's fantastic.
But it's great how he's just... And actually, he wasn't this old when he did this film. That's mm-hmm. the thing.
Yeah, they had to age him.
They did age him. I mean, we saw him, actually, when we did 3 Days of the Condor. He was mm-hmm. in that. He looked, mm-hmm. you know, longer.
Right.
So the makeup is awesome.
Yeah.
Now, here...
But he's awesome for being able
timing,
to portray that.
The timing
this,
of
listen
this.
Listen to this. Because this is actually what they're doing, but listen to that.
Yeah.
And then he comes into it and he watch this. And it, of course, I forgive the uses of the zooms in this because it's Owen Roizman. It's great. And look, this guy turns and one of his eyes is basically gone. And it's because he knows the horror is growing in him. He knows there is a horror unleashed mm-hmm. on the world. And this is all basically reflective. It's like an outer expression of what's going on inside of him.
And just, it's all dread and being unsettling. And you get pulled into this world of dread and it's, so much unsettling stuff going on. So you're waiting and waiting and waiting for the major horror just to hit you square in the face. And the film stretches it out before it does. So you're on edge this entire time. And that's what gets you. And so your defenses get weak over
that
period
of time.
Well, it's
the same thing. What's happening to you as an audience member is the same thing that's happening to them, you know? You're getting, something's building inside of you. You know, and you don't know what it is, and it's unsettling.
And that's the definition of suspense, because and the suspense is drawn out from the very, very beginning, and it's just used in the pacing and everything, and just the little things, and the clock stopping.
And that actually, if you were to freeze frame or look at that sequence, you can see they used a dowel or something behind the pendulum and stick it out, and the thing sort of goes back and forth before it stops. It's like there's a glitch.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I don't mean to wreck it, but we will talk tech stuff through this commentary as well. So.
The first AD is Terrence Donnelly, was Terrence Donnelly. And the second AD was Alan Green, per IMDb.
You know, though, even though I know this is, I know what happens in this film, and it's not anything pleasant, it's almost so beautiful right now. I wouldn't mind being in this situation. You know, I wouldn't mind being involved.
What?
What?
Knowing
right
what
now,
is going
just,
on
yeah,
with him?
Yeah.
And how...
Well, but that's...
A
I mean,
demon
once
is
again,
making its presence known to him?
But that's the context of, I mean, once again, editing. I mean, you can edit something and tell a story, and it can be two different things depending on what elements you drop in and drop out. But, I mean, his performance, just everything about it, the weariness, and it's just...
Yeah,
everything. It's like, he is... I don't want to say he's haunted, because that's But in a way, he is. He's just carrying. He's carrying a great burden right now.
Well, and you can see it physically on him,
and which is what makes he's. I mean, such a great actor. Yeah. Swedish, by the way.
And that's what he has to do because it's really not written. He doesn't have dialogue. If you look at his role in this film, he's got to do it all visually. I mean, much of it. He's got backstory in his own head as an actor, but he's got to convey it visually and through his body.
Well, then also, you know,
through these sequences
with the support of the camera. And I like how the camera just kind of. Comes around the
just
corner.
Just lingering.
Well, it comes around the corner. Actually, does make a move around the corner to reveal him.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, I mean, obviously he stands out. He's basically a Westerner. But
look how much we've been watching him just walk. There's been, I don't know how many shots of him just walking. This would never happen today. And that's what I love about this film is that the investment in this beginning sequence.
Now, part of this whole thing is that he is traveling. He's traveling to confirm something. You know, he said, I have to go find something. Mm-hmm. So he wants to confirm. He's like, oh, there's guys with guns. He's like, yeah, it's okay. And they're like, yeah, not a problem.
He's got it under control.
And instead of having dialogue where he talks to them, they talk back, they reveal something about themselves. We don't.
He just waves a hand and it's okay.
But, it makes sense, though. You know, they probably don't even speak the same language.
Yeah.
We all know what's going on. We don't need any dialogue. I love that.
And once again, it's the use of the zoom, but I think it's so well used.
Yeah,
nice slow
reveal
zoom.
I really do too. I mean, I mean, obviously, like most, you know, film addicts, you know, it's not something that we all really like. But in this, I think it's used really well.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks you in and sucks you out.
And that shot that we just had with the shadows on his face.
Right.
It's things happening. We wonder what's happening. And then we go to the next shot to explain what that last shot was.
Right. And see,
I love that.
But the thing is, he had to come around to the other side. And it's all. And this is wild.
And now we got some evil going on.
Well, because basically, yeah.
And there's the dogs.
There's just badness all around.
And now we've identified.
And now because basically what we've done is in the first 9 minutes identified who the bad guy is. That's what this has been all about.
And there's some composition.
Oh, that's nice.
Just sound effects. The dogs continue.
Yeah.
The way the film began, we're back on the sun, and now we go to our next location.
Now, look where the center of the sun is. The center of the sun.
Is it on the house?
No, it's to the right. Now, let me explain really quickly. You see that building to the right we're passing? Okay, but that's the key bridge that's along M Street. That bridge on the right of the building
little
next to the stairs. I used to work there. it used to be a firehouse and turned into offices. So the stairs lead up to Georgetown, that where the house is right now, where we're going to go right into. That was an empty lot. They built the facade there, basically on the Georgetown.
Not a real house there.
Nope,
that's a set.
It's an empty lot.
Wow,
that's great to know.
They built the facade, then basically those stairs. I used to walk up those stairs to get up to to the upper part. That's right by Georgetown University, and the Georgetown University kids. Basically, what they do is they run up and down for running for track.
Oh yeah.
So yeah,
I had no idea
I worked next to those stairs for a whole summer. It was awesome.
Creepy.
A summer after you'd seen the film, or you hadn't seen the film at that point?
I think, I'd made a point of seeing it by then. I was 21. Yeah. When I had that internship.
I would be creeped out by the stairs, that's for sure.
It was great.
I wouldn't want to be walking those stairs just after seeing this movie.
But that's the point is, you understood in context. It was just used as a set. That's the thing. And I mean, first time you're like, oh, wow. And then... Well, because I remember, actually, we used to go out to Georgetown all the time, and we'd go by there, and it's like, oh, let's go to the Exorcist stairs, and we go, look and walk up and down.
That's so creepy.
Well, because we'd go down to M Street back in the day,
right.
Until everything moved to Adams Morgan. For all you DCites, you'll understand.
So this is interesting. It's already cold in her room, and Reagan has the covers off of her, meaning she's acclimating to coldness.
Is that what it is?
That's what I take from this visual. The window's open. Reagan doesn't have her blankets over her.
Yeah.
So she's already being infected or being possessed.
Okay.
I
never got that. Okay, it's another...
Yeah,
She's overheating. Okay.
And we heard the noises in the attic already.
Right.
Yeah.
That was the first thing we heard.
So it's already taking place from the very first scene.
Now, I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit because I'm just trying to remember, clarify some things from memory. This is opportunistic, right? Pazuzu just happens to land here, right?
As far as needing a reason specifically?
Well, because Kinderman finds, and this is much later, and we'll point it out, but Kinderman finds at the bottom of the stairs, this is after the person has died, finds the little statue of Pazuzu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily fate. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
it was just more like circumstance.
Well, no, but did someone actually come and plant the... In other words,
what's the reasoning?
Did someone come and plant that? Or was it just, you know, this is where the demon landed? I'm assuming everyone has watched this movie.
Oh, if you're listening to this, you better have already.
We're going to wreck it for you.
Just forget it. We're ruining everything. Hey, HMIs. You see that?
Oh, I love a movie in a movie. Mm. Another thing, you know, it's just like a little element of this, but
yeah,
I like it.
I like it. Crash Course. I'm like,
Warner Brothers film.
Great name for a movie, and it takes place at a university. Crash Course. Get it?
And Chris McNeil, that's Ellen Burstyn's character name, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
She's trying to make sense of, apparently, it's underwritten or something's wrong. And she's trying to get a grip on it.
I love
this director
her.
Guy, he is hysterical. And this guy, Jason Miller, I just have to say, he's phenomenal in this film.
Oh, and he looks great.
He's perfectly cast, perfect casting. And, you know, a director's responsibility, casting. And this film is perfectly cast.
George,
look at her building herself up to enter the scene.
Yep.
Well, it's an actor's moment.
She gets touched up just a second. There we go.
Doesn't want it because she's investing herself in the scene.
Leave my collar alone. This is great because this is Georgetown University. I mean, they shot on campus. And Georgetown University actually is I think it's a Catholic institution.
Wow.
That would make sense.
Yikes. Yeah.
So there is definitely that. I think it's Catholic. And please, anyone from Georgetown, I apologize if it's not, but there is a religious aspect of Georgetown. And this is what, 73?
This is a great zoom. This is like a perfectly timed zoom. Watch. Jason Miller, screen left.
There he goes.
And it comes in beautifully to meet him in the intersection of this walkways.
But what I like is just...
Gorgeous.
All the work with the extras is all very natural.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, so often it's just so tough to get anything like that. And, well, it's not to get it, but you see so much of it. That's not.
It's just a well-coordinated,
excellently
film.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now, Jason Miller wrote that championship season.
Yes, he did.
Won the Pulitzer Prize.
I believe it did.
And he died young, like 60 or something.
Relatively, yeah. And he's the father of
Jason Patrick, I believe.
Yes, sir. Who was in
Speed 2.
And oh man,
sorry.
When he listens to this, he's gonna be like, dude, do you have to remind me?
Yes,
he's much, much better known for much Lost
you say
Boys.
It. Oh, Lost Boys.
Lost Boys. Oh, yeah.
And here's our music cue. It's the first music.
And
here's our Tubular Bells.
Yeah. Now, this is Tubular Bells, which back when this came out, Tubular Bells was actually a top 40 hit. It was put out as a single.
Really? I didn't know.
Yeah, that was part of the whole marketing of it. Yeah, they found that they could, you know, basically market this. And that's how I got to know about The Exorcist more, because it's like, oh, it's Tubular Bells, of course. First time I'm watching it.
Ooh. It's wonderful and ambience.
But I got to listen. My dad had the album, so there's a whole Mike Oldfield Tubular Bells. Oh, you should. It's like three tracks, and they're super, super long. You should totally listen to them. It's like totally early 70s music, but it's experimental music, but it's really, really cool. The whole part where he goes, he's testing the different tubular bells, and he announces what they are, because it was done on a synthesizer, right? I think.
I couldn't say the instrumentation for sure.
I think it was a
I wouldn't doubt if there was
a combination of things. But anyone who hasn't listened to tubular bells, it's totally worth it to like listen to it. You totally listen to it, and
I'll have to check that out sometime. Oh,
yeah, Lalo Schifrin was assigned to score this picture. William Friedkin threw out his score.
Dinner at the White House. Wow.
She's a big-time actress.
You're kidding.
No, she's famous.
She is famous.
No, they said
Chris
that.
McNeil, yeah, she's big-time.
And there she is.
She's a star.
Which I also think is something interesting that adds to this element, because it's something unique in a horror-type film, because you're saying anybody could be susceptible to this. Even someone who's successful, even someone who's well-known could still have this horror in their life. You know, it's not just something that befalls... you know, the average person in middle America or whatever. It can get to anyone.
Anyone with a soul.
Yeah.
Right.
And children, which is also another thing that makes
what really makes this film horrific, I think, is the child element.
Yeah.
It wasn't an adult that was possessed. It's a child. And what is done to innocent childhood in this film is the most unsettling element.
But that's the whole part, is the demon is able to get through the child's imagination. That's how the demon gets in. Well, at least that's my reading of it.
But I'm saying, as a plot device, making it a child made this film as creepy as it is.
Oh, absolutely.
As a human being, you watch what's being done to a child, you have no, your reaction is going to be repellent.
I like how they basically painted part of the station here. They put the blue in there to distinguish it from the colors we're seeing in Washington, essentially.
Mm.
But that's all blue. I mean, that's definitely not what it looks like, but it's a great touch.
Just so many shots of just people either looking at other people, alone, and just walking.
And look at the lights. And then the lights on the subway are purple. Lights on the subway are purple.
Now, this is an incarnation of the demon, correct?
Is it?
Because that voice is brought up later in the film when it's coming through Reagan.
No, I would say the demon reached into, basically...
Into that
person? Into his mind. And
used him?
He's pulling the voices from his mind, yeah. That's why he pulls the voice of, you know, his mother and that guy. Yeah.
Oh. I think it could go either way, actually.
And I like how New York just looks so shitty, and you've got kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, New York
is... Look at that trashed-out car.
New York is basically a pit hole, and yeah, Washington's nice and clean.
That's what I mean about the art direction. I believe this. That is so completely believable. And this apartment he goes into, which represents his mother's life, which is a huge element in this film, and its effect on this man... This apartment is beautifully done. I believe this apartment. I believe this woman is ill and he can't do anything to help her. The money's not there. She needs so much better than this. And she's trapped in a very horrible place that's deteriorating just as fast as she is.
Well, and it sets up a scenario here of questioning faith. You know, someone who has a lot of faith is missing a lot of other things. He doesn't, you know, he can't provide for his mother. You know what I mean? It's just setting up...
Here's his backstory. He was a very promising boxer. Mm-hmm. Beautiful backstory there, and he gave everything up to join the priesthood.
It's all, you know, pictures, and it's not shown at the beginning. It's just in a point-of-view shot, basically. As he's,
it's tight. It's cramped. It looks completely lived in. Wonderfully done. And it's a handheld POV there.
Aww.
And look at her. I mean, they didn't beautify her. She looks like a person would look. The lighting, it's harsh on her.
She's not
sweet. Glamour lighting.
Hey, it's a Philco. Nice. And the Greek radio, that's awesome.
Look at all that feta.
No, and the olives. Nice.
It's like a loaf of feta.
Slightly theatrical lighting on her, but it looks good.
Well, it's harsher lighting, and you can kind of...
I mean, she had a pin spot on her, basically. It looked
right. For me, Owen Roizman can do no wrong.
Now, what are his other credits? I'm not familiar with the name. I know.
Owen Roizman?
No.
Didn't he do really. 3 Days of the Condor?
Sounds like a fit. Again, not being familiar with his body of work, I've never really taken note of him.
Aww.
Please stand by. He did The French Connection with Friedkin.
Uh-huh.
Played Again, Sam, Heartbreak Kid, Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, Stepford Wives, 3 Days of the Condor.
Big 70s.
Return of a Man Called Horse, Network.
Oh, my. Hello.
Oh,
okay.
Wow, yeah.
I should know this guy. Mr. Well, 1970s.
You should. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I know. Electric Horseman, Absence of Malice, Tootsie.
Oh, wow.
Taps.
Yeah. I like to. I really like that. Taking the part right here to really expand his backstory, and I like that you get to see that he's not perfect. You know, he smokes cigarettes. You know, he's kind of
exactly.
He's kind of. You know,
he's human.
A little
he's
jaded.
Absolutely human.
Yeah, yeah. He's human.
Absolutely human.
Two other films that I think were really well shot that he did were Wyatt Earp and Grand Canyon.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And he also did The Addams Family.
But I'm telling you, like, I'm really impressed by the Lonely Hearts Club. You know,
Sergeant Pepper's.
Yes,
I love a little. This is the one with the Bee Gees, right? And Peter Frampton.
Yes, and George Burns. Don't forget George Burns.
Yes.
Now, here we go. Where have you seen that image before?
The bird.
That was the statue that Max von Sydow looked at.
Ooh.
Look at the wings.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
She's manifesting it already.
Nice.
That's no accident.
Yeah, of course not.
That we're seeing that. Now, may I say that Ellen Burstyn is one of my personal all-time favorite actresses.
Me too.
Ever.
I think she's
Same
super
here.
Talented. I think she's gorgeous, by the way. Like, the second that you first see her in this film, I just find her striking. She's, like, laying in her bed and, like, working on her script, and I don't know.
Well, she'd been before this, I think her, the big thing is she'd been in the Last Picture mm-hmm. Show. Now, this is creepy. This is the first time we see anything really super creepy.
Abnormal, yeah. Paranormal.
Like, I want to watch this. Basically, here we go.
Boom. And look at her reaction. Ellen Burstyn. That's the way you would...
Cognitive dissonance. It doesn't compute. It doesn't... Mm-hmm. See, there's
Captain Howdy.
Captain who? Captain Howdy. Just, yeah.
Private greetings.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke. You both owe me Cokes now, man.
Ellen Burstyn, I think not too long after this film, maybe a few years, she said this was the darkest experience she ever had.
I can imagine.
As an actress. She said she had to inhabit the darkest place that she could imagine for 6 months. Mm-hmm. A relentless 6 months of dredging up the darkness.
Yeah.
She barely got through it.
She's a toughie. You see that? I love that cut because basically it got out of the scene at just the right moment, but didn't have to bring it up to any summation.
It gave us just enough what we needed to know.
Exactly.
It doesn't beat us over the head. It doesn't spoon feed us.
All we needed to know is that, you know, the demon basically does not want to talk about mom.
That's a nice in-the-moment moment. See, Ellen Burstyn, very in the moment. I'm sure the little brushing the eyelash was not part of the script.
I think she was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture, Last Picture Show.
Mm.
Well, there were a lot of people nominated for that.
Yeah, but Cloris Leachman won the Best Supporting Actress.
And Ben Johnson won Best Supporting Actor. Yeah. And there was Eileen Brenn in that, too. I mean,
everyone, great cast.
Everyone was in that. We should do that sometime.
Yeah, we should. Yeah,
that's coming out on Blu-ray, I think.
Remastered.
I think we will have to watch it.
Digitally remastered. I love that.
But back to Exorcist.
Actually, speaking about that, that was directed by Bogdanovich. And Bogdanovich, in this year, had directed Paper Moon.
Which was, I didn't know, I just recently saw, Tatum O'Neill was nominated for her Oscar the same year, Linda Blair.
She won, and she beat Linda Blair out. And they were both
I cannot believe.
And they were both 12 years old.
12-year-olds iconic performances in the same year going against each other at the Oscars.
It's just, that's a random occurrence.
Again, you know, William Friedkin, I mean, getting the naturalness out of these two actresses. Well, Ellen Burstyn, boom, she brings it to the table, but directing kids. And look at this. I believe every bit of it.
Yeah. That's why it's so scary.
It's life. I'm looking at life. I'm a fly on the wall in these people's world. That's the best compliment I can give to any film when it has that effect on me.
Aww.
Right. Well, because, I mean, it treats it like, a drama, but not high drama. Just you've got life. You've got your life moments as you're trying to get through.
And no quote-unquote horror film would ever have this much
stuff. Well, that's the thing.
Before something huge happens.
At this point, is this a horror film or is this a suspense film?
Good point.
I mean, it's both. It's more than that, though. It's just a really good story, you know?
Oh, yeah. With horrific elements.
Yeah, but I just don't think that it can necessarily be categorized. It because it's just a really good story and it's a really well-made film, it can fit in a lot of categories.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's a character film. That's what I really love about it. It's people. Right. It's a people film. And to me, it's this man's story. It's Father Damien's story.
Now, why did you say that?
It's his story within himself with his battling with faith. That's the way I see it.
I think it's several people's stories. I think it's Max von Sydow.
I see him being the linchpin that everything else revolves around.
I kind of feel like it's Evil's story. Really.
Oh.
You know, I kind of think Evil is the central character. Sometimes, you know, if you break down a story, there's the central character and then everybody else is part of the essential background, and what everybody else in the essential background want is opposite from what the central character wants. You know, they're completely separated, and I think the evil stands on its own in this film and everybody else stands together. That's my personal take.
Well, it is. Basically, it's evil against everyone.
Right.
Evil presents itself and everyone is against it.
Right. It's the only consistent, actually, and it's the only thing that brings all these people together.
That's a great shot, by the way. Oh, this is nice. Now, this is a
zoom. This shows the actress in her.
Hang on. This is a zoom out. A zoom out, and then the camera starts moving right here. Mm-hmm.
Then it reveals Reagan.
I love her little assistant.
And now, the one interesting thing is when you watch it, no one really swears except for her, and she's always saying either God or Jesus Christ or for Christ's sake or anything. And it, for some reason, watching it, all those men, whenever she uses those, it really pops.
Yeah.
It really does pop, and you're like...
Well, even when she was in the film at the rally, when she's being the actress, being you know, acting in the film, she says that. Right. She goes up with the megaphone and she says, "For God's sake," and it like really stands out.
It somehow does pop.
To me, this is a good scene not only to show the story of the father element being so flaky, Reagan's father and Chris's husband, but it also showed that Chris can be a movie star in her attitude.
Right.
Because the way she's talking to the phone operator and everything is the way a movie star would talk, who is sort of going on a diva trip.
She's got an early call.
Time to make a movie.
I like the picture of Regan in the background. It almost looks like she's praying.
Ooh, nice.
Ellen Burstyn doing a wonderful job of just waking up.
I like that it was yellow. What is this? We just had this shot of that. The yellow sheets.
Yeah. I do like the color schemes a lot in this movie. I mean, in a way, I think it's a little dated, but at the same time, I do think that it was chosen for a specific purpose when the movie was being made, you know?
May I say... Well, I mean, back then, actually, it was what it was. That's the thing.
Yeah. You
know, that was the choices, and everyone else has just basically imitated them.
This is the tropes. This is the sequence right here where it becomes horror movie time.
Yeah.
This is where it's a payoff for the audience,
yep,
for all the investment up to this time. She's going into the attic. The way it's shot,
yep,
the sound design is amazing in the sequence of the noises in that attic. Those guys
and
did a great
dim,
job.
And it's dim and it's dark. And the light switch isn't working.
Wide awake, creepy, creepy. And this sequence is a classic horror movie sequence.
Yep. I like the editing, too. I just cut back to Reagan, you know, and then it's back to her.
Unsettling, because Reagan's not all well, obviously.
She's starting to be not all well.
But, I mean, this is already, like, a bad sign here. I mean, when you're going into an attic
with
a candle.
Don't go in the attic.
This is not a good
imagine
scenario.
The audience is 1973. Well, no, you've lined up for 8 hours to see this movie. You've heard nothing but the horrific buzz about it, and now you see the sequence.
Going back to your horror movie rules there, Heidi, doesn't know she's in a horror movie.
No,
yet.
She has no idea.
She doesn't know. Once you know you're in a horror movie, don't keep on acting like you're not in a horror movie.
Yeah, you don't go. You don't go in an attic,
right,
at night
with a candle.
Okay, I have a pretty solid rule of my life. I will only ever go into an attic if it's during the day. I don't care.
Oh, okay.
You just got to play it safe a little bit,
and
you know.
Of course,
there's no rats.
There's a little clue. There's a no rats, but.
There, that little wolf's head, whatever, that meant to scare us.
Attics are just creepy in general. The idea of a bunch of old, discarded items collecting dust in some dark, dismal, like,
area. Well, to
area.
Me, there's a scraping again. Now, the thing is, where's the scraping coming from? You know,
it's the presence of Satan.
Well, you see, that's the thing. Is it the little...
That's right there.
Oh, that was freaky. Is it the little...
that candle effect was
not
amazing.
Not the candle effect. It's the little stone thing. The little... It's not my kind. The totem.
Yeah.
In other words, because the totem is found... I don't know why the totem thing is bugging me, because when I saw it, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense unless someone brought it to the
Lee
house.
It's Lee J. Cobb finds...
No,
you're saying?
Lee J. Cobb at the bottom of the stairs. Uh-huh, it's going to happen. Actually, it's going to happen relatively soon. You'll see. This is wild. I'd forgotten all about this.
For 1973, this is
this
intense.
Is probably... Well,
this
yeah,
is pretty
now
much.
We're getting to the area of, like, you know, sacrilege.
Blasphemy. Yeah. It's a film to show that, you know, blasphemous things.
Well, I mean, it's to show that, you know, as Friedkin said in his intro or said in his things, this is about reaffirming the presence of good by reaffirming that there is evil, you know, in the universe, and that's the whole thing. Then they both exist, and this just treats it all realistically. And he comes in; it doesn't sensationalize it. It's just like there it is.
Again, very documentary style. It's underplayed.
Yeah,
underplayed.
That's all. Yeah,
it's just a slice of life.
It's all in this man's reaction to seeing it, and you just see it for a few seconds,
but the camera work is still, you know, movie camera work. Moves
on him
all the time
as he's moving in on us.
I mean, that is like...
So now we know it's building in many parts. The presence of this evil is now...
Right. I mean, the evil is now affecting someone. So
entering many
so,
people's
so
lives.
So they would desecrate, you know, whoever, someone would desecrate the...
It's touching many people.
Right.
Right.
Beyond just the people we're following, which actually, again, adds to the scary element. Because what else is happening that we're not seeing?
Again, well, that's good. An environment. This environment is beautifully realized, this hospital with the mother in it.
It's New York, and we can tell it's New York automatically. Now, what I like in this sequence is that he walks through the ward, and of course he's a priest, and once they see him, they're
that's
like,
it.
Well, you know, it's like, oh no, it's the religious guy. Oh no, I have to cling to you.
They're all over him.
Exactly, which is...
And he's, as a son to his mother, has enough to deal with just with that, and he can't
without
get him, to every
with,
one of them.
Without being, well, no, but the whole thing is because... You know, the way I saw it, at least, is he's religiously a symbol to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking to him for...
Yes.
Salvation, mm-hmm. connection, something.
Comfort.
Comfort, fix me.
And he's being broken down as a man, and he just can't take it. He's not strong enough.
Also, they got some great-looking extras. They do, ladies.
Yeah.
I mean, they really look...
Again, I believe it. And it's unsettling to me.
See, they're like...
It's unsettling. It's the real deal. I'm not looking at a movie. It's like, that's what it's really like. And also, as I watch this, I'm thinking, all these women's sons. He's just one son to one woman in this room. Think about all the stories that are in that room of the sons and family of those women laying there.
This is actually a really scary, tragic situation. I mean, thinking of being one of these women, thinking of being in this situation is actually just... freaky in and of itself, and this isn't even, you know, a horror element or a terrorizing element.
But it's part of, the totally unsettled environment that he's living in.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, it's a reflection of this is the world he's in now. His mother is...
Failure.
It's basically, it's everything's falling apart with his mother.
He's reaching a place where his most is not good enough and love is not enough. And when a person reaches that spot, they can become forsaken very easily.
Yeah. I like the actor on the right. He's a great character actor. I forget his name.
And it also sounds looped. That guy's voice sounds looped.
It's okay. It's Greek. This is great. I mean, you just cut right to it and we get to see him box.
And he's trying to get his frustrations out.
And Jason Miller has got a great...
And they won't leave.
And Jason Miller's got a great movie face. That's the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does.
He's got a great face. Oh, here's the party.
And for whatever reason...
It's the party.
Oh, we get some music.
That's right. Music. It's cocktail time. It's the Washington set.
Yeah, it's like society people. You know, they're all in this certain age range. They all kind of dress the same. I think that's kind of uncomfortable too, actually.
This is a great scene.
It's the drunk Brit.
The director is very funny to me. The guy, actor who did this guy. So he's an astronaut, the one on the left, huh?
Oh, that's what it
is. All the famous people at the movie stars party.
Oh, wow.
And the astronaut is Chris McNeil's wannabe boyfriend, I think.
That's right.
And this antagonism of the German butler, what is this all about?
Well, like he says he's Swiss, but the way I see it, it's basically...
Oh, Swiss.
But it's the demon basically working...
Through people?
It's essentially evil.
The presence of evil is permeating whoever you can absorb it, whoever comes into that house.
I
just think it's a drunk director being his, you know,
it's a drunk director.
A man with a drinking problem.
Well, it's a man with a drinking problem, but it's like the thing with the dogs at the statue. That's what I'm saying.
You can take it that way, sure.
Because you see what he just called him? I mean, he is really digging into him. And then basically there's...
The bassist in people.
Basically brings about violence. So...
What's happening is, you know, it could be a happy home is being...
But look, compared to the whole tone of everything, the disruption and everything, and just how the passions can just like explode like that. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's the way I read it. The demon is working its tiny little...
It's getting under the surface.
Yeah.
And it's bringing what's below up.
The bad vibes are coming out.
And again, she had to adjust her covers, maybe she... And the window's open, see?
Oh, sure.
And her eyes open. She wants to be... She loves the cold. She's starting to turn different.
Right.
And then it's all being put in place visually. It's all building up.
There's the drunk British director.
And now he loves her and... She's trying to be a good, you know, that's her director on the film. I mean, she's got to be nice to him.
Come on, you've seen directors like that, haven't you? I'm kidding. Well,
poor guy, and it's very well acted.
Oh, he's very good,
very well acted.
Oh man,
look at that '70s outfit that Ellen Burstyn has on.
I know. What I love here is that, you know, here they are, they're around the piano,
the end of the party,
and they're singing. Do you ever see that anymore? I think we need to have more of that.
I've been to parties like that.
Yeah, I think we need to bring that back.
I've been to parties like that. That's wonderful.
I don't have a piano.
I don't have a piano either. But we need to have a piano so we can... I like how this guy's like totally...
He was turned into Liberace there.
Oh, yes.
What happened to me is having my own floor show with everyone in sequins. You're like, oh, okay, Father.
Now, I like how basically here the camera has just turned, essentially gone to the other side and gone behind where the astronaut is. So he's there, and then she comes in the right side of the frame. And what does she say?
You're going to die up there.
Hang on.
Yeah. Yep, and this is where it's like ultimate creepy.
It's like, okay.
I think from like this moment on, it's just the point of no return. She just peed.
Yeah, in front of everybody.
So that was written by William Peter Blatter, right?
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, hi, Tim.
And I like the choice of the white dress that she's in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she walks in and she's wearing something that's so pure, so innocent. You know, it almost looks like a christening gown.
Well, representing childhood.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Poor Chris McNeil, you have no idea, sweetheart.
You have no idea. None. Now, they built, for later reference, they built this set, for anyone who doesn't know this, they built actually the set in a refrigeration unit.
Yes, no James Cameron digital effects were added afterwards.
Oh, no. When they actually, they said in the notes, basically they lowered the temperature to minus 20 degrees.
20? Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, we remember minus 20
That's
degrees, don't we,
school.
Heidi?
I try not to,
out
actually.
In the snow. Come on, playing out in the snow, minus 20 degree weather.
That's old school film.
You come in and your hand actually can't bend or move. Your joints are just stuck. Oh, yes. I don't miss that.
Yeah, I don't miss minus 20.
Now, we can say...
I think I can go down to 10 degrees, and that's about it.
Reasons why I can't get possessed. Too cold.
Inclement weather.
There you go.
I just need a heat demon.
And look at this.
I'll be fine.
And she's got the... I don't know. I'm just looking at this. She's got the main...
Now, here's our payoff scene. This is it, folks. How much into the film are we? How much time? 30, 40 minutes?
40 minutes.
Yeah.
40-minute mark. This is where it hits the fan.
That's a great way to look at that.
And you'll notice no music.
Oh, no. Well, there's no music to cue it and to lead into it either.
But right. Music are kicking in right here.
Which is what I think adds to the uncomfortability to it. Yeah. It's just like, whoa.
And then there's the... Oh, there's a piano player again.
And, of course, in the extended cut, after the woman's cleaning the floor from the urine stain, that's where Reagan comes down. I think it's when...
It's during the party, isn't it?
It's not the end of the party. The spider walk is it when the director gets killed. I think after the director gets killed and Ellen Burstyn reacts to the director being killed, then Linda Blair comes down the stairs in the extended cut. But they cut that for the theatrical version.
Right. I got to see that sometime. But still, I think the original theatrical version is the way they settled on it, and I think it's the best. I mean, it works
for me.
Great. It works great.
I think it works the best for me. I think there's things that happen in the extended cut that cheapen it and are like cheap horror effects, and I'm taken out of the film. It calls attention to itself. Mm-hmm. In the theatrical cut, I'm not taken out of the film. So I like the theatrical cut better. This is very well directed, I feel, and played, this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's not an actor. Because of their energy, they're conversational.
Right.
They're so conversational. And the placement and what he's saying without words and what he's dealing with, I just feel it's a fly on the wall moment again where I'm just in this room with these two people who are living their lives. And this man walking out apparently was not a professional actor.
Bless you.
And which we should say a lot in this movie. anyway, that young priest was not a professional actor, the guy that played that.
That shot doesn't hold up as well.
The lighting and probably the source materials. I'm sure they had some source material problems. This is a 37-year-old film.
Right. And this is the dream.
The dream,
they had the flash of the mother. This is
creepy.
It's a great shot.
For coming up out of
this
subway.
This is like a 400-millimeter, really like a 400-millimeter lens.
And again, very cinematic, very well done.
You hear nothing.
Yeah, the sound design nicely. What, you know, again, good sound. Oh, there we go.
We
subliminal
the flash.
Yep.
Flash. The sound design, again, it's what not is heard. What is not heard. It's not what's heard. It's what's not heard.
Well, right.
It can also make great sound design.
Well, how it's designed, what is withheld. And
again, with music spotting, when to play score, when not to play
now,
score.
This is great because now basically they're trying to attack this with science.
Yes.
This becomes the
yes.
whole
yes.
thing. Now for the about next half hour to 40 minutes, they attack
we went
it with
from
science.
A hospital to a church, from cut to cut.
Yeah.
That says a lot right there. And now inside, he is falling apart, and he's questioning what he's saying.
Well, that's what's
as
great.
He's saying
but that's what's great about this is that the way it's structuring itself. I mean, this is he's not involved with the story yet, and it's still telling his story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's leading the pieces to all come back together. Now, remember, Max von Sydow appeared in the first 10 minutes, and mm-hmm. has been gone. First 9-10 minutes has been gone since, and he's only going to come back in that last part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like it's
mm-hmm.
those three storylines that are being essentially brought together.
Yep.
Very, very well.
We learned all about these people.
Which is what makes it such a great drama. And that's the whole
thing. I agree.
And that's, I mean, I think it's a horror film also.
Gosh,
it's
the one thing that actually does date this film is the smoking. You know, I'm going to say it's the only thing that actually like takes it out of like a modern feeling is because they smoke everywhere. Doctors smoking in a hospital. Mm. I mean, the priest smokes. Everybody smokes.
But I think actually that's part of the design. I think because even back then the whole joke was that, you know, here's your doctor telling you not to smoke and he smokes. And I think, you know, he could have chosen not to do that. But I think it was on purpose to show. I mean, for me, at least, it was like the corruption. Even this doctor cannot lead a pure life, so to speak, you know, follow his own words.
Sure, but
he
like
still smokes.
Anyone younger than me is going to think that this looks dated because people younger than me don't remember.
That
I mean,
world.
They don't remember a world where mm-hmm. you can. It's strange when you go on an airplane and you see ashtrays or in hospitals or in public areas,
right.
Movie theaters. You know, you like the older ones, you'll see where the ashtrays still were. You don't even know. You know, people younger than me don't know that
right.
world. They don't know where you could just smoke.
But it's the same people that go into airports and all they've known are being scanned. And x-rays.
Right, yeah.
And having to take off your shoes
right.
compared to, I can say, I remember I went to an airport, we didn't never
yeah,
had to
yeah.
do that.
But that's what I'm saying, in here, I think it's used intentionally. He did not have to have him. In other
well,
words,
sure,
in
of
other
course,
words, in other words,
but in this time, that was acceptable. You could do that. That wasn't out of the realm reality.
But in the movies, usually, they didn't show it. In other words, in another movie, you wouldn't see someone smoking as much as here. In other words, for me, I see the use of smoking as a subtle personality.
I completely agree. But I'm just also saying it does date it to an extent because you couldn't, if you use that in a modern film,
oh,
you had a doctor
fly.
Smoking, it just wouldn't make any sense at all.
Right. You have to take it in context
yeah.
of the time
yeah.
still. But
yeah.
still, I think at the time, it was still intentional because the joke was, you know, your doctor, here he is saying, gotta quit
smoking.
Well,
sure. And having the priest smoking, you know, it's something that leads to like just showing things about the jaded nature of his character, you know.
Now here we have the whole sequence once again. I mean, just everything that we have her go through in terms of the science. But for me, this is part of the horror, the horror of the science and what they make her go through, and especially when it comes up, they're getting her prepped. When I think what they're going to do. I mean,
Ellen Burstyn was quoted as saying the most violent reactions she saw while sitting with an audience watching the film is this sequence where the blood comes out of Linda Blair's neck.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
they basically they stick the...
because it's reality.
It's a catheter, essentially.
Right now. Oh, my gosh. I'm already starting to feel a little grossed out.
And you see, and that's the...
But this is a wonderful director's choice
iodine.
To go this deep into this sequence and to show it as full out as he did.
But that's it's to show the horror.
Oh, man. Yeah.
The depth of the horror.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's also to show that mankind's really going about something in an entirely wrong way. I mean, they're trying to combat something spiritual with something medical,
well,
and you can't do it.
Well, the thing
is, that's why we would approach it as human beings.
Well, they're trying to interpret this with
oh,
science.
Oh, gosh.
Well, here it comes.
Oh, I don't even
but
know
but you don't
if I
see
can
it.
Look.
You never see it. It's okay.
I know,
but now
but
we see the blood come out. We see the blood
eyes.
Come out in the next shot.
But this is great prop work.
Right here.
This is
yeah.
absolutely great prop
right
work.
There.
Look at that. Oh. Ooh, that's
no, that's a great touch.
I'm literally, listeners, I literally have my hands around my neck.
And then he's inserting it, and you know it's going into her vein at that point.
That's the yeah, so they can.
So,
they
and then we have it again.
But,
and it's a child. So you're seeing it done to a child. So that's why you're going to have such a violent reaction. And we see the blood go out through the tube.
But that,
and that's just science.
But,
that's just
but that's,
medical
but, stuff.
And then they tape her head down.
They
this
tape,
is also scary.
Look at the mother.
They tape her head down, but then this is not the kicker for me. That's not the kicker. The kicker is this. They set her up with this machine.
The sound?
It's the sound
yeah.
of the machine.
Yeah.
It's the big, huge knocking. And for me, It's like it's a different
but
kind
just
of.
Look at her little face.
It's like it's a different kind of horror film.
She looks so uncomfortable and sad.
Mm. I'm just. Ellen Burstyn is an actress to be the mother through this sequence. She really had to
see right here.
Bring a lot to the table to watch her daughter go through that.
All that thudding.
And there, nothing like will this, work. Nothing. They won't find
and
anything.
And I like how it just comes up, and you get to, you basically you're scanning like the doctor, and it comes down, and then it comes up.
And it takes its time. It takes its time. And from an actress's point of view, to watch Ellen Burstyn, what she does, and the frustration as her frustration builds with the committees of doctors, something that people have gone through and are going through right now with the medical system.
But even looking, but even their experience, because their experience is looking through, you get to see it a little bit through their eyes as they're looking at it, and they're like, okay, what's happening? We can't find anything. We're applying everything that we know, and we've proved they can prove that there's this or that. And applying all of their medical knowledge, which to what they perceive and interpret as a medical problem, up until now.
Right, it's a medical problem.
And until now, what they actually they come over and get to see it.
Well, and even after this sequence, the doctors still believe it's a medical problem.
Well, because they're being modern,
they're
being
doctors.
Logical.
They're doctors,
you know,
because it's all science. And then, of course, it looks. And
oh
it's like,
man,
crap.
Oh.
That's actually, I think, a stunt woman in Linda Blair's place.
I agree.
Yeah, for both of these and this too.
Again, no music. Great choice.
I like how there's a Charlie Brown.
It's all being looped. And here we have her throat.
Oh, yeah.
There was a Charlie Brown on the night table. Oh, man.
God. 1973.
This was really controversial.
Yeah.
I just barely hear about it, you know.
Yeah, poor Ellen.
Oh, man.
Ellen to do this sequence, I'm telling you.
Linda Blair.
Yeah, I'd want to hear interviews with Linda Blair for her recollections of, I really didn't know what I was doing, what I was in. I was just told to yell, to scream, or if I really was psychologically unsettled by what they were doing to me at that age when I was in this movie. And I'd like to know.
I feel like I have heard her talk about it. I don't want to say anything in great length because I'm not, you know, 100% sure, but I feel like she actually has said she had a good experience.
Then that's a proper film environment, you know, as far as the child actor, then that's good. I hope so. And here's a wonderful scene with Ellen Burstyn.
What I like,
right.
What
but this is smart. You know, she's thinking, how could you do that?
Yeah. Serge, you have something to say?
What I like is the pacing of it with the editing. How you have the high excitement and they just basically can cut out with the sound and how they just control and just basically the whole pacing of going, building the action up and then calming it down, giving those moments of calm afterwards. Mm-hmm. So everything collects and you get to see, you know, you get to the reactions of the actor and you get to experience through, you know, basically through Ellen Burstyn. And then, of course, you have here the men of science who are struggling with, in their own little way, we're just being rational, trying to figure out what it is. And then how they get to it, they're kind of like, okay, well, you could try this.
You know, and you're not giving her any answers, and well, she's at the end of her rope.
Because doctors don't really often have answers. That's all.
Gosh, she really does say the Lord's name quite often. See? In vain. She's already said it like twice in this last little moment.
And that's the interesting thing. No one else does. And
yeah, no one else does.
Maybe that's the hole in the moral fabric that the demon finds. I don't know. Or maybe it's the suggestion.
Well, I would say the lack of God would be the perfect place for Satan to set up shop.
Either that or actually, that's the way to look at it.
So it makes sense, you know, because she's kind of like this bohemian modern woman, you know.
She's asked in the movie, does your daughter have any religious backgrounds or whatever? And the mother says, no, nothing.
And
nothing at all.
She said, oh, Christ. You know,
yeah,
once again, she's the only one who swears in this film.
You know, the lack of one thing leaves room for another.
And here, so what they're doing is men of science, they're eliminating all other possibilities. They're trying to find any reason for any of this to happen.
And I love that so much of the film is invested in just medically, they're trying to find out what's wrong with her.
Because they're being reductive. That's the whole thing. They're trying to, deductive, actually. They're trying to deduce their way through it.
Because this is what we would do, you know, this is what we would do in the modern world, is we would, I mean,
it's
I would.
It's well written.
Yeah.
I mean, and then he goes to the last thing, like, keep any drugs?
instead of a horror film where now we would be in Reagan's room where she's possessed and all the effects are hitting, you know, the walls and we're being blown out of our chairs for the next 45 minutes. No, it's taking this approach, which is much, much better.
I like how she said, no, I don't even smoke grass. That's a nice silhouette of her.
Yeah.
That's great. Nice.
Yeah, they didn't have to light her. That's nice. They made it his... He's popping, so I'm sure he was thrilled with that actor.
Yeah. So he, and it, what's nice is that the doctors, they don't, you know, they leave all the emotional investment in Ellen Burstyn's character. So that the, you know, the doctors are just very cool, calm, rational. They never really get, they're all just following, being methodical.
But I can see him in his reaction just there. He's being affected by it.
Right.
He had a dramatic moment there where he's such at a loss and he's frustrated in his loss.
Right. And so that, and now see, this is here. This is that
good
the,
direction.
But that's at the foot. That's at the
foot of your stairs. Huh?
And that's at the base of the, that's right there. That's the base of the stairs.
The angle on those stairs are killer.
So basically what you have to do is you have to drive. Well, actually, technically speaking, you have to drive way up to drive way back around. So it's a bit of a cheat, but that's okay.
What I like was visually we saw something happening to those stairs. She drives right by it. It's revealed the cause of that later. As to explanation
Well,
of that.
She's going to find out in a few
because
minutes.
Because she doesn't find out at that moment, which is really good life stuff.
And of course, you have the lights. This, that was great. How she walked right into it, and the camera did a. What is it? I don't know. What's it called?
I don't know, but it moved in on her.
Truck down?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's called a truck down. I don't know.
You could say that.
Cameraman, please correct me.
I like how they had that pre-lit little area just for her eyes, you know, and she goes right into it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, she hit her mark. Everyone hit their mark perfectly.
And now it's cold.
And now, so this is the aftermath, because this is now after she's basically thrown, she, well, basically broke his neck, did horrible things to his head, and threw him out the window.
Mm-hmm. But we don't know that yet.
We will never know, and it's always just inferred, because notice we never saw, now I don't know if it's in the extended version, but here we never saw Burke in the room with her.
Yeah, no.
No, it's not in the extended version either.
Right. So it's
that
all,
was never shot.
Basically, exactly. So it's all left out. It's like we never saw him come over. Now, you know, you'd shoot it, you'd see him, you'd see her turn around, you'd see it happen, and then here it's all left.
You'd be spoon-fed.
In other words, maybe this isn't happening. That's the whole thing. Maybe none of this is real, and that's what makes this really, really great. It's all leaves it to suggestion.
Were you saying for the length of the film or for up till now?
I just think all over.
I think,
you know. In other words, in other words, the ellipses here work. In other words, there would be a tendency, I'd say, if there was a remake or to do that kind of thing, you would show Burke come over. And it's like, okay, you're going to take care of the kid now. I have to go out. They would have filmed the whole scene where she, you know, she.
But my question to you is, are you saying the film is shot in a way that one person can say, yes, Satan possessed this girl, this happened, or another person could say, oh, no, it never happened. It can be viewed either way, you know, that Satan was the cause of this.
I didn't understand what your question was.
That's my question. Oh, you still don't understand it? I mean, I'm saying...
I'll reserve judgment for the end of the film.
Okay.
But right now, the way it's laying itself out... It could still be suggested that, no, there's no way Regan did it. Is it Regan or Reagan? We keep on saying it two different
ways. I say Reagan.
I think it's Reagan. But it's two different, in other words, it's suggested because we didn't see it.
Right.
In a film telling story, in, you know, film telling way, maybe it's not happening. Later on, you're like, yeah, she totally did it.
Okay.
I think and she did it right now. I think the second you see this, like, disturbed look on her face.
Oh, yeah. But the point is, it wasn't shown to us. In other words, we didn't have the whole thing. Burke's there, looks, oh no, eyes wide. What could have happened?
It wasn't indisputable, is what you're saying. It's presented that it's, we can dispute it at this point.
Absolutely.
Freaking creepy.
And may I say, in Ellen Burstyn's reaction to learning of the death of the director, I loved her initial reaction, but then it cuts back to her and she's hysterical. I wish they had just held on Ellen Burstyn's face to go from not accepting. Processing and then becoming hysterical. I wish I could have seen that entire arc. And in the edit, I was like, oh, darn it.
Gosh, her hand is freaking me out. I think it's so simple, but that also, it's so abnormal that it just makes you feel a little weirded out.
Good luck, buddy.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to be in control of what's inside of her.
But they're still trying to treat it relatively rationally. Oh, man. Yeah, the ground.
Well, yeah, at first they try scientifically, you know, now they're going to try to, you know.
Now, this is beautifully done. We get the sense of smell. They don't say anything, but she's got to back off because, you know, it smells like rotten eggs on steroids. Oh. And that's a great touch. That's the smell of evil.
Yep. Oh, look at that look.
Yep.
Interesting POV.
Yep, with the camera traveling down. And that's all we needed to see. And
this is our introduction to Lee J. Cobb.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful shot.
Yep. That's Georgetown. Georgetown University.
Lee J. Cobb was a great actor.
Once again, I like the use of blue.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're tying it back to the use of blues, and we know that it's basically Jason Miller, Karras' story.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, there's always a lot of blue around him. And recently, I've been noticing there's a lot of red in the McNeil. Is that what their last name is?
Chris McNeil.
Yeah, the McNeil household. I've been noticing a lot of red. Like,
uh-oh. A lot of red, huh?
Well, even in the scene where they come and they reveal that the guy's dead, you know, the Chris is wearing a shirt with red piping. The assistant is wearing a red scarf. There's a couple of like different red items in the background. And then we get, you know, to the father, and there's always tons of blue. Look at his sweater's blue.
Mm-hmm. Lee J. Cobb on the waterfront. What else? He did a lot of noir type stuff in the 50s. He's always the heavy. He was in Party Girl, a film with Sid Charisse and Robert Taylor. He was actually one film I never thought I'd see Lee J. Cobb in. He was in the King and I, the musical. He played the assistant to Yul Brynner. He was like his right hand.
Oh yeah,
Asian guy.
Yeah, weird. I would never have made that connection in my mind unless you just pointed that out.
Oh wait a second. It wasn't the.
Not the.
I don't think it was The King and I. It was the film that it was based on something about The King of Siam.
Yeah. I remember him.
That's
like
the first
that.
Thing I saw him in, I think.
It's so weird in that era where they had, you know, they would have non-Oriental people playing, you know.
Anna and the King of Siam. Yeah. Sorry, that's the name. Yes, it was not the most PC stuff.
No, but it's still incredibly interesting to watch it even now.
Now we have the detective element
yep.
entering the film due to the homicide. Good reaction on Lee J. Cobb.
Yeah.
It was just a fall.
Yeah, in a fall.
Mm-hmm. There's our zoom. There's the 70s zoom.
Yeah.
Is there an M Street?
Oh, M Street totally exists, yeah. M Street, that's the street along where, at the bottom of the stairs, which actually, Canal Road runs into M Street and runs all the way in. So I worked on M Street. In Washington, basically, you have a lot of streets towards that area, which are all named after letters. Basically, they start off at letters.
So you have 26 streets.
Further south? No, then it goes further. Then it starts into names with one syllable, then names with two syllables, then names with three syllables as it goes further up north in the district. So below M, you have K.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think, is there an L? I don't even remember. L may be way over. But K Street, you've heard of K Street, you know, with lobbyists and everything?
Yeah.
That's K Street, so.
Interesting zoom. Yes. And we zoom in on them. I think the next shot is a zoom as well.
Everything's zooming on these guys.
I like it, though. I think it's just kind of like, you know, it's kind of like coning in your vision on them.
It works. Rizman makes it work.
And I love anything where the background is soft and the foreground is sharp. So I love this shot for that.
Mm-hmm.
I love depth of field stuff.
Now, I'm trying to remember because I read the book a long time ago. I think in the book, Kinderman dies.
Really?
I don't remember, and I don't think I have the book anymore. I'm going to look for it.
I know that in the extended cut, Lee J. Cobb is the one who wraps up the film. And in the theatrical cut, he's not there at the end.
Right.
And a lot of critics have said the extended cut's ending is much more satisfying compared to Linda Blair just kissing the priest at the end and the car driving off in the theatrical cut.
Right.
So I need to watch the extended cut again just for that reason. So what's see the deal if I agree with
him. What's the deal with him wanting to go to the movies with him? What is this? It's like, buddy, you're bugging me.
I don't know if it's him being what he's saying or if he's going to want... This is a device to get to know him better for his case. I don't know why. Does he think Father Damien's withholding something?
Maybe maybe he thinks that there's a rogue priest going around. You know, he thinks there's a rogue priest going around.
It's a strange concept. But
I just think that, you know.
The Dominicans go pick on them.
Lee J. Cobb thinks this other guy's withholding, and so he needs to get in, dig in to get the truth.
Oh, Lee J. Look at him. He was starting to lose weight there. Lee J. Cobb.
He does look like Sal Mineo.
Yeah, he does look like Sal Mineo.
He's right.
Back when Sal Mineo was still alive. Yeah.
In the brief existence of him.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He died way too young. There's Two Bitter Bells again playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at her lips,
I
man.
Know.
The chapped.
And they look authentically chapped.
Oh, the makeup on this is incredible.
Dick Smith.
Now here's where they're actually going to, you know, psychiatrically.
And I love Ellen Burstyn's frustrated at the end of her tether. And acting in this.
But I like this. It's just how it's set up, and you have all the guys in, you know, their white doctor's jacket.
She says there's been like 86 doctors she's gone through.
There she goes. Jesus Christ.
Yep.
88 doctors. That's close.
And she's also the only one who she said bullshit. She's the only one who does. Except for,
those
of course,
actresses,
Reagan.
Those Hollywood actresses. Chris McNeil with their potty mouth.
Well, exactly. That's what it's saying. That's exactly the symbolism.
But I love this guy right here. I love the shot. The shot is there for a reason to build up to his next line of dialogue.
Crosses behind her.
He's saying, after all this medical stuff, we're going to give you another option that is completely different from the way we've approached
this. And the way they approach it is still applying it from a psychiatric point of view.
Right.
But the only reason why they're giving this option, they have nothing left.
For God's sake. Yeah.
They have nothing left to explain what's happening and what's going on with her. They're exhausted. They have nothing to give her.
Yep.
So they have been brought to this point where they got nothing else.
Like I mentioned, it's a rabbi.
And they do. They present it psychologically that it's not really something that's true.
True.
But the appearance of it is enough to convince the patients.
Right, because they're convinced that, yeah, exactly.
So that's the way they're still working.
They're working from a very material point of view. That this
no
is
spiritual
the kind of thing,
belief.
That this is actually something that's going on inside the person, and that it can be, by applying a religious template to it, it will convince the person that this is happening. As opposed to, it could actually be something that is spiritual.
But I think that's, you know, a totally logical rationale for that. You know, and I'm pretty sure that that's probably happened before.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that's the way they approach it, because that's why they're doctors. That's what the doctors
do. Well, supposedly, William Peter Blatty based this on the case that actually took place.
There was a case in 1944 in Mount Rainier. It was not as extensive like this, but there was where they thought, you can read up on some of it. I've never done anything. I know... I thought it was a case
that happened more recently than that.
No, 1944.
Oh.
Well, actually happened in Silver Spring.
And was it with a child?
It was with a child of some sort, and an exorcism was performed. I don't know the ins and outs, but I think there's some dispute as to whether, you know, anything was actually happening, but who knows? I don't know enough about it. Now, here, this is the base of the exorcist, of one of the exorcist stairs. They're just stairs connecting M Street to the street up there, which I can't remember what it is. It's not N, but it's like before N. It's like a small street. There's actually a bar just like right around the corner. I think it's on the Rathskeller.
And this really ticks off Chris McNeil to find a crucifix here. And that says a lot about her character, too.
But she leaves it there.
But if you're saying as far as her cussing and that element being setting the tone of the home... And then Beelzebub.
I don't think she gives it two thoughts of her swearing. But now this is where he finds a totem. Now this is the totem of Pazuzu. How did it get there? Because it must have been with Burke. That's what I find confusing. So where did that come from?
What I'm doing is tying in the crucifix discovery with her language and what her element is in that house. She's very upset that this crucifix was left there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what does that say about her and her beliefs and her value system? And then talking about her cussing and her language and everything element. So I'm saying if she's the leader of that home and those are her values and stuff, that could be a perfect doorway for Satan to come in because there's nothing of God in that home.
Right.
She doesn't want anything of God in that home.
Well, and I think logically, maybe when she sees the crucifix, she thinks maybe that Reagan brought it. You know, like that reaffirms to her, like maybe she is doing this psychologically to herself.
Well, but here's the thing. She's asking everyone if they put the crucifix under the pillow. I think this is more of a plot point because this is part of where I was getting it, along with the totem. Mm-hmm. How did that wind up? I think Burke put it under her pillow. Because all of them deny having put it there, and there's no reason for them to lie. They would say, okay, I confess, I did it, but none of them did it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was Burke who put it under the pillow for some reason. I don't know. It's like, this is, I'm like.
So why, we have two things showing up, who put them there. You're looking at the totem and the crucifix.
Yeah, plot-wise. I mean,
and they happen at the same point.
Yeah.
That they're being revealed to the audience that they're there.
Exactly. And
so that's important.
Notice they cross-cut between her discovering it and also between with it being found at the bottom there.
But it's also just blatantly laying this out. Okay, audience, this is what this movie's about. Good versus evil. It's not just generic.
What it's about now is specifics. Right. God against Satan.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it's about.
A Christian God against Satan.
Mm-hmm. Rather than assuming it can be anything else, it's finally revealing itself to be specific.
What I like about this scene is that during it, basically they have zooms. They zoom in on his, I think they zoom into a close-up here. And then I think on her, they also have a zoom in. And it's very, very slow.
It's so cinematic, but I've always been a fan of slow zooms on monologues.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, brings it right in on the actor.
Well, because it's effective. See, now it's pushing in on her.
Mm-hmm. I like that, too, when the speed of zooms match if you're cross-cutting. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it should. Technically, that is how it should be when you're editing.
Yeah.
It's a rule.
See, now he's laying it all out. He was killed. His head was turned around and then thrown out the window. And it's like no one's in the room except for Reagan. So how do we rationally explain this? Because now they've gone through science, and now they're going actually through, you know, law enforcement. And now there's the pullout.
Right. Spiritualism, spirituality, medicine, and the law all coming together on this.
Right, and then
I love Ellen Burstyn's reaction. She's a Judas priest. I've never noticed that before, guys. It is true.
That says a lot. I can't unnotice it.
She's the only one. She basically breaks whatever the first or second commandment. She takes the Lord's name in vain
throughout the whole thing. But I love Chris's reaction to realization of what could be going on, that her daughter killed the director. It hits her right here, and she's trying to play cool, and she's trying not to show this detective what she's thinking until she figures it out for her own and what to do.
Right.
It's really a good moment. That's her interior monologue. That's exactly what she's going on. He wants more coffee. She didn't want him to accept more coffee. Now she's got to spend more time with him, and now she's trying to act as normal as possible to give another cup of coffee.
But she's an actress, so she can do it.
Yep.
And this
she's an actress playing an actress.
And look at her face right here. She's barely hanging on. She's barely keeping it together. See? Look at that. I love that.
And she has oil and vinegar there.
Yes. That's a revelation.
Well, I like the shot through the, I like the foreground stuff.
Okay. More demonic pictures, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think those are like images
I think the turtle is evil. And I'm sorry, they shot through the oil and vinegar twice. I think it's significant.
Hmm.
It's a very nice kitchen, actually. It really is.
Look at that blender.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful kitchen.
Nice lighting. That's very good daylight lighting.
Very motivated. Lee J. Cobb does an awesome job, really, just being the very kind.
He's sort of Columbo-ish in that he's being... Well, you want to go to a movie, father, and then right. this stuff with her. He's more of, I'm a person.
But he's very genial, and his name's Kinderman, you know?
Kind of.
Yeah.
He's kind, and Kinder being
children.
German for children, yeah.
But also, it's a heightened episode that we're watching right here because he loves her as a movie star because he's in the movies.
Well.
And this is where he asked for her autograph.
Ah, but I think he's totally manipulating her. I think...
Oh, he wants a signature or something?
No. He's just manipulating her to basically get her to feel
trust.
Comfortable. So
he's just trying to get an in.
Everything is about getting an in, so you make her...
He's a good detective.
See, now that's, again, this is a repeat of what happened with the father. Go to the movies with me. Was it real, or was him manipulating the person
totally
to ingratiate himself to them?
He's
so you
totally
see that way in both...
Look,
like
he's
here.
Saying, I loved your
well,
film.
Well, and the
I
film he brings
times.
Up to the priest is Othello. You know what I mean? It's such like an internally tormented kind of, you know.
So you said he used that
jaded,
to make a comparison?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah. He's totally manipulating. He's not.
So he's very savvy.
He's casing everybody.
Yeah.
So we don't take him at face value.
No, we don't.
Okay.
And he asks her for an autograph, and he asks if he has a pencil. Like,
and
who
look,
gets an
where
autograph
she breaks.
With a pencil?
This is where she breaks, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nice rock on your finger.
Look what I have. Look what I'm in the middle of. What do I do? Who do I turn to? I'm not strong enough for this because I only rely on myself. That's what I see.
Right, yeah.
She's coming to the end of herself.
Well, basically she's
And
done.
Here's our huge scene. I'm sorry, Sarah, what?
Well, basically she's run through everything. And now this basically just cements.
May
everything.
I say, this is where I lost respect. This is where I lost respect for Friedkin's direction technique, because he told Ellen Burstyn that when she gets slammed to the floor, she'll be on a harness and pulled.
Oh, was that? Oh, the shot coming up is when she was pulled.
Yep. And he said the force would not be too hard that I pull you with. But then he had grips right there, smash her into the floor. And that's a real reaction on her face because she really hurt her back.
Can we just take a step back? That was really gross what she just
really
did.
Freaking gross. Really freaking gross. Okay,
again, you have a mother, you have a child, you have
everything that should not be happy.
Elements,
up,
you have religious elements, you have.
And then her head turns around.
This is where it's pay dirt for the audience.
And of course,
just, shock.
She says the C word.
Yeah.
And it's like. So we have basically in that little time.
And we go to complete silence, which is unsettling.
But that's the point. And then we see, of course, who we're going to lead to next to provide a solution. And then just going back to the scene, I mean, basically you had the thing with the crucifix and then taking her mother's head and...
Yeah. It's all blasphemous
Oh, it was...
73. But I still can't believe
it wasn't just blasphemous. It was... And this is why I want to go back to it, is because basically it really just pierced... Taboos. It's just like severe taboos, especially taking her mother's face and sticking it there.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you got a cigarette, father? Sure, I do. Thanks.
Again, I was going to say, pre-smoking
is a big
deal.
It now, but now we haven't seen her smoke, and now she's
losing it.
She's losing it, and now she's smoking. So, and actually, that is a path. That's in Georgetown. That's a little one of the little canals that go past there.
And they're making small talk, which is perfectly logical. Real life. And also, I'll say it through the entire film, but Ellen Burstyn's acting to get to the darkness to do this scene to where she would be at as a person, I think she just does it beautifully.
Of course, going back to the scene previously also, the kicker was, of course, and of course, which was reported a lot, was Reagan's head completely turning around.
Yeah.
Which just tells you, okay, there's no psychiatric thing here.
Right,
something
right.
We're not
totally
in Kansas
flipped.
Anymore.
Right, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, this has definitely gone into a whole.
Even the thing with
arena.
The crucifix and with the blood mm-hmm. and the mother's face
is what I said
but
to you.
But the head turning around was the thing. That's just like that's it.
And that's what I'm saying to you is rather than everything can it be explained scientifically in this movie the entire film. If you're a person not of religious
faith, head's not turned around. Yeah, head's turned around. I think that does it.
Yeah, that pretty much does it. I mean, that's impossible.
Well, I told you it would come. I told you by the end.
Okay.
Well, and like climbing up walls and like
that's later.
Yeah, but plates.
Don't spoil it for me.
Plates and things flying around. I mean,
the plates, the records. I could see someone throwing them from off camera, but the head turning around. I don't know. And this is nice. This is all drawn out. I mean, after that, basically,
and it, you get like a relaxing
scene.
Moment.
And that intense scene. What was the running time on that? About 45 seconds.
It was very short.
It was fast.
Oh, that was short. But you got your three big things in there. Like, oh.
look at her acting in this. Oh, she's so
good. But you know what's great? You know, she's got that big, huge bruise on her face.
Yeah.
And she
got
never...
she got the sunglasses.
Gosh, and it's that it's so real, that uncomfortability of continuing to, you know, she keeps on adjusting those sunglasses. And it's just kind of, you know, it's more so than anyone would ever normally do that. And it makes it so authentic that, like, she really feels like she has a big bruise or something to hide.
And this is interesting that, you know, she's the one who brings up exorcism because it's been brought up to her. And now he's saying, nah, we don't do that anymore.
I love the way she brought it up. It's very, I'm talking about this. How do you go about an exorcism? Because she's had it in her the whole time. How do I say this to him? And she just says it. Hidden between other sentences rather than making a big deal out of it.
Because she knows she needs to make it happen.
Aww.
And she also realizes that she's saying words she never thought she'd say in her entire life, and she's in something she can't explain. And she's broken down to have to examine what her beliefs really are and to have to look at something she never thought existed. And here she is right in the middle of it.
Yeah, and he goes through the whole thing of how the church has to she's like, no, you... But dude... Come to my house, take a look. This will convince you.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got proof.
That's right. It's not like, no, it's kind of crazy. See, she even says she needs a priest. She's convinced.
Need a physician. See, yes. She never would have been saying that. And I love the arc of her character.
And once again, Jesus Christ again. And she said, fuck. And it's like, see?
I never noticed that before, guys.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is a big, big
but in a way,
detail.
But in a way, it's taking, you know, the Lord's name in vain. But at the same time, it's saying God's name plenty. So in other words, she's the only one who really invokes God one way or the other.
Right. And she clearly has to be thinking about him or think about, like, the possibility of that being even semi-real to use it that often in conversation.
Well, I think there's two camps on that. Yeah.
And I like how they basically stripped everything out of away. It wants no straps.
Yeah.
He's already referring to Reagan as it.
Well, he's known this kid for a while. I mean, it's clearly not her.
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. And they had to everything. Oh, man.
I don't know. How many teenagers' rooms have you been in, Heidi? I'd say...
That's exactly what my room was like. You know, like my parents had all the bedposts covered up with pillows. Everything was removed.
It's not too far from what actually is.
And you see, it says, I'm not Reagan. Just comes out and says it. Look at Linda Blair's performance. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
She did perform. I mean, she didn't do the voice, but she did it.
And she got those hurtful contact lenses. Good for you, Linda, going through all that.
It's a much too vulgar of display of power.
So now we have Mercedes McCambridge doing her stuff in the film.
But once again, kudos to Linda Blair for acting the crap out of it, too.
Mm-hmm, I agree. She's very mature in how she plays these scenes.
Okay, so you've seen it. That was the voice. The voice you mentioned before about the guy, the altar boy.
Yes. Yeah.
So basically, he goes into the psyche to pull that voice out. And I wonder just like what is going through his mind. How could he be denying this? And look at the skin.
I know,
cracking.
It's just disgusting. And the voice, I mean.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
Ugh.
That's her middle.
And what really is sickening is he opened his mouth, so he got some in his mouth.
It's up his nose.
Yeah.
That's a bit much, yes. 1973.
Oh,
goodness.
It's great.
To be in that audience where people are just fainting.
I like that they
you.
Just, in the background, just to interject, they focus up on two characters she does. It's Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf, which you could say is very parallel to what's happening with her.
Her and Captain Howdy.
A pretty big bad wolf.
Her and Pazuzu, yeah.
And see, that's a very demonic thing, that image right there.
Oh, that's right, with the wings. I didn't catch that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, a great real-life scene. Right here, between the two of them. Very nice.
I like the Ivory Snow and the Arm & Hammer and the Bold in the background. And I love the unfinished basement. I really do.
It feels real, though.
Yeah. Well, it does. It's what's great. It's an unfinished basement with the washing machine and the dryer. And
you get the water softener.
And the hot water heater.
Yeah.
And the one bare light bulb. That's very nice. Effect,
and the way he's done it, you know, it comes up. But it's like in the subway in New York. It had that slightly purplish tint, which is night. Well, it's a very strong source pointing at us. So now he's like laying it out. Well, this is how we determine if she's really possessed. Dude, she just puked in your face.
Bare light bulb lighting.
Right what I really like is that basically, you know, he's laying it out. You know, it's not like, yeah, this happens all the time. No, this doesn't happen.
Right.
This just does not happen.
And she says she's the devil herself. She's not saying anything about any other small demons. We're talking the big kahuna.
Right. And he's saying that basically everyone says they're the devil, so... But he's seen the physical evidence. This is what the thing that kills me.
Well, it's denial. You know, I think you see something that's like out of your like realm of belief. You deny it and try to make it logical in your own mind.
Well, the cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
That I always talk about, but it always plays a lot in this kind of thing.
I just shows
actually, you know, there's your orange mm-hmm, totem mm-hmm. right there
between them. And it's lit. That thing is lit.
Yep. So that's intentional.
But this really shows, the scene shows, he's trying to process it, and it shows his relationship and his spirituality, what's going on right now.
See, she's basically like, come on, buddy, just do it.
And he's hesitating because he's at a hesitant point in his spirituality in his life at the moment.
And also he's got to go back to now, you know, the
and bring
church,
in his
the church establishment
yes.
and say, okay.
And put his butt on the line.
Ooh. He's trying to piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, because Reagan knew that his mother was dead, so that's what convinces him. Now he knows it's true because Reagan knew something that she
I disagree. I think that impressed him, but I think the scene that is the one that convinces him is when the assistant pulls him up into the room and it says, "Help me," on her stomach. That's the scene.
Oh,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's where he just says, okay, that's it.
He's considering it now, though.
Oh, he's heavily considering,
he's considering
it.
Well, yeah.
But I like that. I like that he's it's still slowly being considered. And there's Kinderman.
So he's struggling again as he goes through the spiritual rituals. But
this is called the sacrament, right?
I'm not Catholic.
I believe it's called the sacrament. I could be wrong, but I'm not Catholic either. But it's great. I really love that
isn't it communion?
Is it communion?
It's like communion. Okay.
Yeah, when you take like the
sacrament's part of
when
communion.
When you eat the bread and you drink the wine, it's communion.
And it's great that he can use the ritual of all this to basically express his faith. Visually.
It's a commentary, yes, on where he's at. And that's what I've been seeing with each time they've shown him in the church doing these things, is that after his mother... And that's the linchpin. After his helplessness with his mother, he came to a wall that God wasn't enough. That's what I see. And so that's why he's faced with this, and now he's in a place believing God is not enough. Oh my gosh, that's why he's in such a turmoil.
And in that sense, what Friedkin said about this is a film about faith, I think actually bears out, because it mm-hmm. shows a display of having to have faith. I mean, that's what this is about. This is less about, in a way, I mean, this is about her possession, but it's just okay, going back to your point about this is his film. Mm-hmm. It's about him displaying his faith. It's about Father Marin facing an old demon, so to speak,
crisis
that he's met before
and coming through.
But also with the mother, it's
admitting a world she never thought existed.
Yeah,
because
right.
she never lived by that.
Right.
And you know, Satan's biggest victory is convincing everyone that he does not exist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is from also used in the Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
The greatest. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's what they say. That's what Corey writes.
So that's what this film really to me is all about. Chanel number 5.
Well, you see, now this is interesting. He says it's holy water and it freaks her out. And this is what doesn't convince him, because we find it later. Mm-hmm. It's just tap water.
Right. And that's just, I think, Satan playing with him.
Yeah, you do.
You know, I kind of thought that too.
Deception. It's all about deception. Lies and deception. That's Satan.
Okay, when someone's talking in tongues with several voices at once, I think they're possessed.
But this is where the other priest reveals that it's people talking backwards.
No, I think it's just the guy at the radio station.
Oh, is it a radio station? I got the.
Yeah, well, is that Georgetown? Because like it's
okay.
a radio station
right,
tech or something
right,
like that.
You're right.
But technically, if a priest fills up water, isn't it? I mean, can't it already be technically holy water?
No, he explains. He explains about it, but that has to be, has to be blessed. He never blessed
on hallowed ground.
It was just tap water. It technically, has to be blessed to be holy water.
But no, to me, yeah. Instead of you, to me, I think it's the spirit inside of Reagan deceiving the priest.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Yeah, because you're right. That's
playing with him, so he doesn't know what's up or down.
But then,
at a point,
then the demon clearly speaks in a that demonic way that couldn't be explained as anything.
Well, because
else.
It's toying. Basically, it's saying I'm possessing this body. You ain't getting it back, and I'm going to play around with you all. Mm-hmm. Because what did he say? He said, "Why can't you just undo the straps?" And he said,
"That would be too great a vulgar
display
of my
powers."
Right.
Right.
Well, it's more fun.
Well, okay. Exactly.
Nice focus shifts.
It's easy
very
to just
subtle focus
it's basically
shifts. Good.
Easier to just play with all the characters. So
but
in that sense,
what the devil does,
right? Mm-hmm. And make them dance. And that's
if the devil just came to the earth with all of its great powers and just wiped out humanity. What would be the point for the devil? You know.
And look at him. He's just like, holy crap.
She looks very much like Glinda Jackson to me,
who won the Oscar that year for A Touch of Class.
Oh my goodness! It's coming full circle.
I know.
Good camera work. Look at this fluidity of these shots. Very nice. I'm glad I learned more about Owen Roisman. I never knew he shot all those incredible films. Nice relationship between these two. I really like the relationship between these two. I hate to say it, but I'm like, they should get together. They'd make a nice couple, but I guess there's a lot of things in the way.
See, basically
with that happening.
Now he's laying out the whole thing about the tap water and the holy water. So he's trying to build a case so he can bring it to the church. And she's like, oh, you're killing me.
More frustration. Now I had it from all the doctors. Now I'm getting it from the priest.
From the church. Exactly. The last stop.
I've had enough of this. Oh, look at this.
And here. She fesses
admitting
up.
She has nothing left to lose. I mean, she's desperate. Poor woman. Her beautiful child.
And how she says it, it's like barely a whisper.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. So this is a radio station?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, that's right. I forgot this. You can hear it say, Paul is dead.
I knew you were going to say that. Oh, no. Or what did... There was the... What did Queen do, apparently, on the... Another One Bites the Dust, apparently, if you play it backwards, it says something also.
Hmm. Marin. Father Marin. That's Max von Sydow, right?
Oh, is that what it says?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oof, nice sound design.
Oh, okay, so it says Marin.
Calling him by name. Get Marin to me.
Oh, that says Marin again.
Yeah. Wow, that's creepy.
See, I felt that jerk was a little manipulative.
What was the phone?
That phone call. And actually, this
scene... was fine for me.
This scene coming up is like the one...
Yes, this is the one that you have no choice but to say this is real.
Okay.
This is what to him...
Gosh. I feel so bad for the people.
Now listen.
Household.
Now this is where they have music.
I know.
Listen.
I feel bad for their neighbors. All that noise.
Yeah, there is. Hang on. Listen. There is music. It's very, very
very faint.
It's very subtle.
It's weird atonal stuff.
And they haven't had any music leading up to anything.
This is your 20 degrees below freezer, right, Serge?
Yeah. Yep. For the most part, I'm sure they raised it at some point.
You know, I mean, it's tough to be a kid actor in Hollywood. You got to get dolled up in that makeup, put in a 20 degree below zero freezer.
I hope she got paid very well. Oh, that's not her chest.
Clearly. Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Because those are not her arms. That's her neck coming up through something else.
Up through the bed, yeah.
Yeah. And there this is a good music cue of just freaky music. Good breathing effect on the chest. Nice.
That's all. Yeah, that's all.
And that's it for him. I am facing the real deal.
Yep.
You are here.
Okay, it's another scene.
You have no choice now.
Now he's coming to the church.
On time.
I didn't say that. You did.
Sorry.
Oh, there's just no
yes,
point.
Yes, Professor Higgins.
He doesn't. How does he not know?
I think he does know. He's just kind of embarrassed.
He's like, embarrassed. Guys, why don't you come on over and check it out?
And I like this man's reaction. I thought he was playing him at first, but I believe he believes him. That's good.
What I like about the church, I don't know what to call them. I mean, the church establishment is how organized they are and how basically irrational they are in terms of, you know, exercising what power they have to in terms of getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And now they're basically discussing actually going through it, which is really good. Now we have two characters we've barely seen. Yeah. We've seen one and one scene.
The one that had a talk with Damien earlier knew of Damien's crisis in faith, though. Okay. And that's what I find interesting. That this character knows that information and knows that this priest is up against this while in that situation in his own spiritual life. So he's got to take that into account.
Right.
Added layers.
And, of course, there's Maren. They mentioned Maren, but that's because Jason Miller, Karis mentioned Maren to him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this was... Did they ever have a prequel to this to show Maren's story?
Oh, of what there were two prequels. First, Paul Schrader did his prequel. Then the studio looked at it and said, oh, no, it's not any good. Basically kicked him off the film and then brought in Rennie Harlan, who basically reshot the entire film with Stellan Skarsgård again as Maren, recast the whole thing and did it as more of a horror film. So you've got basically two films side by side.
And they came out around the same time, didn't they?
No, actually, they withheld the Schrader one, and then they released them on video about it at the same time.
I have never seen...
And I still have to see them.
Yeah,
I've never seen
either.
Any other Exorcist movie besides the first.
Wait, you didn't see Exorcist 2?
No.
No, I didn't.
Not the debacle? You know,
just for sheer entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, with Richard Burton.
But this is just the kind of film where you just... I don't know. You don't see it. A reason
I have
for
to,
a sequel.
Well, interrupt you.
The best shot in the film's coming up, yes.
Look, you have all this smoke and fog that they had to put up through all the streets to bring it over to this.
Yep.
And then this shot with that light coming out of that window, this is a stellar shot.
Well, that's why it's the poster.
Yes. This is a once-in-a-lifetime shot, really, the way they got it on an exterior outdoor
shot. I'm sure they did it several times.
No, I mean as far as the composition and getting it right. In Friedkin's commentary, he says that it was a once-in-a-lifetime shot.
Right, but that was the post. Well, of course he's going to say that. And there he is. And this great, because how silhouetted he is, that's classic. Classic. As Mr. Fasinelli would say in art history class. That's okay. Look at that composition. Actually, in film, also film class, we'd watch films.
I would say that's
classic.
That's the type of class to say that in. Film class.
Mr. Fasinelli. It was awesome. Really briefly, there was Exorcist 2, but then there was Heretic, something like that. And then Exorcist 3, which actually has George C. Scott as Kinderman, and Jason Miller actually is in it also, is actually good. 3 is worth seeing, definitely. Okay. It's minorly related to this, but Kinderman's character continues.
If I were to ever make a sequel after the first one, it screams to me for a prequel to explain Marin's past. That's what I would have done.
Well, that's why they went back and did it. And I don't know.
But Exorcist 2 didn't do that, right? It went forward with the story.
Yeah, I think... I think
I'm saying the very next film after 1 should have been a prequel.
Yeah, Reagan went to Europe or something like that. And, you know, of course, things start happening again. It was John Schlesinger who was who directed it. So anyway.
Schlesinger or Borman?
No, Schlesinger.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was John Borman.
Oh, really? You're right. It was Borman.
John Borman.
I stand corrected. I'm sorry. All right, let's focus.
Poor
let's focus.
Chris
Look
McNeil.
At these great zooms, which he says don't listen.
There's also more scenes between Damien and Maren in the extended cut talking about faith, and I hear that's a very good meaty thing that should have been left in the theatrical.
Well, I have like several things to go back to. There's plenty of films to go back to and watch after this.
Yeah,
there's the extended version. There's Exorcist 3, and there's the two prequels. Oh, look at this.
Good awesome. Old age makeup on Max von Sydow. Is it Sydow? Sydow?
Max von Sydow. Sydow.
Sydow.
Max von Sydow. Sydow. Look at that. And she's like,
Good luck. She should say good luck. God be with you is what she should say.
I like showing the healing on her face a little bit because it shows how much time has actually passed. Yeah. Like this has been progressively getting
right.
worse.
Her bruises.
Yeah.
I like that, how there's the pullback past them and then they come in. Look at the source lighting and it's just the two of them. It's just,
and she's locked out. Oh, great shot. Great statement right there. I will say for as slow and deliberate as the film is, it has an incredible payoff. From here on out,
I think it's slow and deliberate, but it's got an incredible pace. I don't think it ever slackens a little bit, but it just keeps building. Yeah,
but I'm saying from here on out is the you know everything and the kitchen sink. Just a
holy shit, that is some bad swearing. That is really bad.
Mercedes McCambridge is reading her. Johnny Guitar notices. That's what made all the crying.
Gosh, the mucus things that they come up with in this movie are just so disgusting.
And the whole thing with the ritual is he's just like, we have to keep on going. You don't listen, and no matter what, anything happens.
No, this guy knows what the score is.
Now, theatrically speaking, what's great is about using ritual is ritual is done. We're used to it, so it allows you to act through it. So to speak, because you already know the script,
and it gives
you a template for a template for words, for through which behavior can come through.
Mm. So you're saying it's a good filmic device.
It's the great theatrical writing device
in order to wrap this up.
I think it's in the writing, but also it's necessary in the writing. But theatrically speaking, when you have biblical verses, oh my God. When you're going for his weakness. Oh, absolutely. When you have religious text that you can use in a theatrical setting, it gives you a clear template for what you can, because it's a familiar text, and it gives you latitude to play the text, but then to play against and play wonderful things through it.
That's a good insight. And that's
the wonderful thing about ritual.
All the supernatural things that are happening here, for all the wonderful foundation that led up to this. We believe it all now.
Oh, yeah.
All the documentary, real life stuff that led up to this makes this play. And we don't question it. That's wonderful. That's a wonderful way of doing it.
And he's just going. He's just going. And he has to.
The payoff is just so much better that way.
Clearly, it's not his first time to the rodeo.
No.
No, that's exactly his character. And he doesn't know if he can get through this one, but... Well, he's at the end of his life, basically, right? That's his character.
We all know that this basically is the end of the road. Look at, it's just. And you see this, and now he's freaked out. It's like this.
Yeah, he left the party for a bit.
He's now freaked out.
He's not pulling his weight.
Buddy.
What needs to be done?
Poor guy. There he's going.
Poor guy.
Oh, there was a flash. Yeah. Oh.
The temperature was a great effect with all the mist, all the breath. Just great old school.
Oh, but
stuff.
The editing. Well, it's just good filmmaking.
It's just
good solid filmmaking.
Freaking uncomfortable.
Yeah. But that's.
I've had nights in my bed like that. Sometimes I can't get to sleep on my mattress, really.
Gross. Just so gross.
And it happens to be on his, what do you call that? A priest's,
scarf.
I mean, it's
it's called a tallis in
to be puking on that of all things.
He's trying to just clear it. I don't know what it's called in Catholicism.
Yeah. Maybe it'll come to me. I think I do know what it's called.
Yeah, I have the vague recollection of.
There's something about a demonic laugh.
But that's it. Well, I don't know. Maybe. Oh. And here's where.
That's some big stuff.
Yep.
Oh, great, great effect of the door splitting. That was a great choice. Great choice. And look at this. Look at Linda Blair. That was good because her reaction to that was, I'm up against some stuff myself.
This is what really put Max von Sydow on the map in American filmmaking. I mean, he had worked with Bergman. Okay, here's where the film goes.
This is wonderful that the mist was added coming out of her mouth, the breath. That was Owen Roisman's choice. He said, the turning of the head is not enough. We need to have her breathing. And that's what really made it lifelike.
Right. Okay, can you imagine you live next door to these people and you're like, what?
That's what
is
I said to Heidi.
On?
She said she felt sorry for the household. I said, I feel sorry for their neighbors. I'm trying to watch America's Funniest Home Videos. Keep it down.
If I was the neighbor, I would have been out of there a long time ago.
I think it was All in the Family was playing that night.
All right.
Oh,
oh my
that
gosh.
Is so creepy.
Yeah, and they just go the whole 9 yards.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything and the kitchen sink is thrown at you. And
look
again,
at
I say, because of the beginning, you believe it.
Yeah.
Look at that.
You'll give it that now. In a darkened theater with a full audience freaking out.
But the thing is that during this whole time, the whole time they've been, I mean, it's been a religious.
She's wobbling a little bit much.
Well.
That's a good shot.
But what I'm saying is you have all the silence. I'll hear them say the power of Christ compels you.
Mm-hmm.
And they...
Just bring it down to that.
Exactly.
I see wires.
Well, I don't see them, but that's the whole
thing.
That's
Blu-ray.
Basically, but you see what I'm saying? Theatrically speaking, yep. They've brought it all down to silence. This is all you hear is them saying that.
They didn't digitally erase the wires. You can see them. Interesting choice.
Well, that's fine.
Man, these priests are brave.
Oh yeah, but the whole thing is they have faith. They have to have absolute faith, and this is what tests their faith so that they can do this because they know that this is true. So they have to have, and this is why this. I mean, I know it sounds strange, but this is a film about faith.
Oh.
And faith ultimately wins in this particular instance. Faith does win.
But I'd like to bring that point up. I'd like to discuss that with you at the end.
Well, there is a price.
Because
there is a price for faith.
What Damien does at the end, I'm wondering exactly what that's all about.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay, now I remember. No, I know exactly what happens.
So, we'll have to talk about that when it happens.
Well, he does something very specific. Ugh.
I think that's an amazing image.
Wow.
Imagery, yeah.
Yeah.
That spells it out, that's for sure.
Well, I think definitely makes it very real for them. I mean, I know we've been talking through this whole thing, but in a way, it's worth going back through this film and not listening to this commentary and watching this whole scene and just taking it in.
For itself?
Because
of course.
Yeah, for itself.
Well, that's what I hope the listeners have done before they're listening to us.
I think it's worth it to go back after this, too.
Film 101. I mean, this is wonderful stuff.
Because this whole sequence from when that door closed and Ellen burst into here is just...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is...
It's an incredible act.
It is an incredible act. I think it's a very good choice of words.
Yeah, I agree.
Beautifully realized. And by that, I'm not saying it's pretty.
The interesting thing is that this beat out the Sting.
Beautifully constructed.
Well, but we can talk more about that afterwards, about why this lost out to the Sting.
Well, I mean, this is pretty controversial stuff. So the Academy, I mean, you don't want to be, what you give awards to is what you're known for. So this is so controversial and so unsettling and extreme. It's not an Academy image picture.
That's true. And the Sting was definitely very Academy
friendly.
They
went safe. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They did. It was all very.
Think about the times. Think about the context.
I love this.
This is the scene.
They're just taking a break.
In the extended cut where they have a lengthy conversation about faith.
And notice how the lighting has changed now. The lighting is now warm. Look at the golds.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't been there before. Uh-oh. Oh, he's going to take his pills. But I like the idea that they're taking a break. You know, they've got to do a comp point.
That is good. It comes in cycles.
All right.
That's human. You'd have to rest and get your strength and go to the next.
Right. And he's going by himself.
I want to see what Ellen Burstyn's been doing this whole time. I want to see how she's keeping herself occupied
during
this.
She's biting her nails off, I'm pretty sure.
Probably drinking.
She had a talk show appearance. She went and
opened
a supermarket or something.
I love that. I mean, this is all handled. Okay, I got to say.
That's a beautiful bathroom.
Okay.
It's so random, but
no,
it's beautiful.
No, I was going to say that wallpaper is so 70s. 70s.
Oh, I love it. I love the faucet.
I like the soaps in the dish.
Yeah. I've never seen a faucet like that.
See, that's great. You didn't see him enter. The door is just open, so you know he's in
there.
That's
unsettling as hell.
Oh.
Here we have our being played. You're being played, Damien. But,
hang on. What angle? Oh, okay, that's... Okay, the angle is very, very strange.
And I find it interesting. His name is Damien, and the omen used Damien as the kid's name.
Oh, for me, the omen is playing at this stuff. This is playing it for real.
I agree. The omen is theatrical.
Yeah,
it's a theatrical take. I agree.
That's
But it was also Fox trying to cash in on the Exorcist. Craze, and box office, but they used Damien to be the name of the kid. Well, actually.
Here we go.
David Seltzer, who wrote The Omen, used Damien in his novel, which I'm sure was written after The Exorcist. So,
did he write the book first and then write the script?
Didn't he?
I don't remember.
Yes, he did. It was from a book and then turned into a movie, I believe. Okay. Yes.
Because I think I have the book somewhere.
I do too.
Or maybe Once Upon a Time I had it. I still think Linda Blair did an awesome job in this.
Yeah,
for a kid actress
too.
level
versus Tatum O'Neal, who did a wonderful job too. It's just like they both
in the same year blows me away.
I know.
You know, you have those performances, kid actor performances that just really stand out, like Patty Dugaston in The Miracle Worker, something that is so mature for a child of that age. This is also the same level to me.
I love how emotionally he can't separate himself from and get it through his head that's not who he thinks it is.
Mm.
Well, but he feels for Reagan. That's the whole thing. He's really like,
oh yeah, he does.
Hang on, look how tall Max von Sydow is versus Jason Miller. Holy crap!
He's a Swede.
He is tall.
Well, Damien's had it. He's got to take a break.
Yeah. Oh. And this is the bad move.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I'll
just stay here alone in my old man makeup, my hunched over look. He probably looks like that now.
I'm going to go play chess with death for a while.
Yeah, really? And win? Does he win or lose in that?
I never saw that.
Oh, I've never.
The most classic movie in the world. For
I think I've seen like about half an hour of it and I stopped.
Which film?
This is The Seventh Seal.
Ingmar Bergman.
Jinx, Yomi Coke. Mm. Man, I'm up to 2-1.
Yeah.
Damn.
You're going to get a whole 12-pack at the end of this.
And by the way, for all you cinephiles out there, I hear that The Seventh Seal is one of the most amazing Blu-ray transfers.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
Look at they even did the makeup on his hands.
Yeah. It's brilliant. He has little age spots.
And this is good that they're just showing her for this length.
Mm-hmm.
And you're waiting for her to explode, so you're on edge constantly.
Ow.
You know,
I like how he's got the tallest. I don't know what it's called. This purple against everything else, which is basically muted whites and blacks, and that's the
interesting.
And then the Bible's red.
Interesting choice of light. It's so bright. Most DPs, you would do lots of shadows, lots of creepy darkness, but it's bright.
It's almost, but it feels a little uncomfortable. It feels a little medical.
Well, he has sourced it from the right and then also from the bathroom. Notice that the bathroom door is open, split. So you can basically...
The door split. It was the bathroom door that slammed shut. Okay. Yeah. We had that split on the right side.
Well, basically burst through. I like that he whispers this.
Mm. Oh, this is a nice scene, too. Wow.
There's Ellen Burstyn, finally.
I'm
sorry. Did it go golds now? It wasn't gold before.
The lighting
I'd
wasn't.
I'd say it's warmer. Yeah, party scene was like that.
Yeah, the party scene was like
that. The party scene had that warm.
Maybe it's the
that
time.
More of like a like a halogen kind of light.
Mm. Two helpless people.
And that she asked the question, is she going to die? Yeah. Because I could very well.
Great reaction.
And he says no.
He does a phenomenal job of being real in this moment movie.
Oh, everyone was great. He was really, really good. Well, he was nominated for Academy Award.
And I got to say, what affects me more, I've never seen him in anything else.
And that's,
so that's what makes it so impactful for to see him in this movie. And I don't recognize an actor from anything else.
That's what drove him upstairs, was when she said, "Is she going to die?" That's what motivated him to go back. Is that going to be Kinderman? I don't remember now.
I think it is Kinderman.
And he's like,
I don't know who the hell else it would be.
Nice focus. Look at that.
Oh, she puts the chain on. It's Kinderman. Ooh, look at those eyes. Ooh. Now what is it? What's up with having Kinderman there? That's the interesting thing.
That was nice. The ceiling was split when he opened the door. That's good.
There we go.
Continuity.
There we go. We didn't see it
again. Like Burke, don't leave people alone with her.
You're really
good focus.
Look
at that.
Oh wow. Look at that. She's just like the holy water spilt. It's spilling like that.
It's just oozing out.
And he's gone.
Life left him. Interesting symbolism with the broken bottle of holy water with the water cascading out.
Right.
As someone's dying.
Now you all remember what happens, right?
Yes. This is the one I wanted to ask you about.
Okay. Here, what does he say?
When it comes to faith. And he's taking on, that's not exactly the most spiritual move.
Jesus, take me.
Yes. I have a big question about this.
Now you see,
and he says, "God damn."
He said, "You just say, God damn, you enter in."
And it does enter him.
That's right. And in that one moment of control he has.
He's a martyr. And he self-sacrificed.
Well, he already sacrificed because he said, "Take me." Oh, see that shift? That was awesome.
Well,
and that was not digital. And he goes down.
Good POV.
The Exorcist stairs.
Good stunt.
Though it was excellent stunt.
Now I have a question about that. The state of his soul. That it's a good theology question, whether he's going to heaven or hell. Because he invited Satan into his soul.
Well, he sacrificed.
And then he
died
with Satan in his soul.
But he sacrificed. I don't know. You know, that gets into
theology. That's what I'm saying.
Theology that I can't answer. I mean, I would say
because he was a man in crisis in his faith at that time.
But he sacrificed himself for Reagan.
I know, but I'm just saying the spiritual state of his soul.
But
he
sacrificed himself for Reagan so that she could live, and then the demon would die with him. That's the whole thing. Now that's interesting because the whole plot wise, he does it so the demon goes in him and he dies
with it in him.
Exactly. So the demon is gone. That's it. Demon's dead.
Dead?
Well, the demon dies. The demon dies. That's the
demon
point.
Departs. Well, I don't think a demon can really die.
But then, what was the point of having the demon come into him?
No, I think
to say a demon could die is like saying God could die.
Yes, I think the demon departs.
Well,
due to that,
right?
Okay, maybe he possessed, and then he departs to do something else.
Okay.
But to me, I'm sorry, there's no death of a demon. So
that's
a theology thing. I won't get into it here right now. It's a good hour long discussion, but I'm just bringing it up.
I think the demon's connection to people for now has been severed.
Right.
Is what's the symbolism of that?
I'm saying because of that he won't linger in the home. He can visit someone else now,
and he has been powerfully defeated by the martyrdom of the priest. By his sacrifice, by good.
Right.
And I think
good.
For good. And I think that that's crippled a demon, but I don't think that that necessarily means that there can be no good without evil.
Right.
You know?
And if you had to ask me, I would say, if I had to whisper in God's ear, I'd say, let him into heaven.
I would, due to his actions. Yes.
Well, exactly.
He
sacrificed himself. Absolutely.
I don't doubt that in my mind. In my mind, he goes to heaven. In my mind, if there is one, which in this world there is.
Right.
I definitely believe that he's saved.
I just thought it was an interesting.
There's the totem again.
No, that's Father.
Father
Damien's medal.
I thought it was.
They do have that originally in the very beginning of the movie. When Marin is out in
That's the coin out in the desert.
Yeah.
Marin's. That's the Pazuzu medallion.
That's Pazuzu?
That's the Pazuzu medallion, yeah.
Oh, well, that makes it completely
different. I
don't know.
But this is why I'm confused, because there's a...
But it also looks like, you know, like in Catholicism, you wear the little...
it looks like a Christianity...
The oh, okay.
Then maybe
you wear the saints on different coins
around your
neck.
It's
and
a good
you're given
medal.
To them as... Good, yeah, they're medals.
Okay.
That's what they are. They're medals.
Maybe it's
medallions.
Maybe it's just Marins, okay.
It's a good thing that represents the good in Catholicism, basically.
Oh my gosh, she's just like, hi, everything's okay.
And may I say, the man on the right who wasn't an actor, this is the second point where I lost respect for Friedkin, was that he smacked him across the face in order to get the proper reaction when he's given the last rites to Damien when they're at the foot of the stairs, because the guy wasn't giving him what he thought was enough emotion, so he like bitch slapped the hell out of him, just said action.
It was interesting. She saw the collar and there was just like something clicked in her mind.
And it's very innocent there. She's innocence, embracing goodness.
But
so you're like, okay, that's
but
great.
She saw the collar, and obviously for me the connection is, you know,
there's some recollection.
She knew that Jason Miller, you know, Karis, someone like that, Karis had done that good for him, her.
Oh really?
Yeah. Hmm. Oh yeah, totally.
Well, that's cool. That's so sad because he wanted to be there for his friend. He was the guy who's trying to pull him out of the darkness, and his friend just...
But it worked. He was pulled out of the darkness.
But to this guy's perception, you know, just he's dealing with a lot of loss right now.
Yeah, of course.
It's interesting that the street
sign in the background, the street is called New Prospect.
That's called Prospect.
It had little.
Said new. Maybe it was a
North Prospect.
Maybe it was. It was like in little writing.
There's the stairs.
Look at the Blu-ray quality that was on like part of the background. It was a little like fuzzy.
The boarded up window. Some bad pixelation or something. That's not good for that shot. I'm saying, the film is incredible.
The Exorcist.
Interesting choice of music at the end.
Yeah.
Yep. That's some intense color in those titles.
I think they're very, very blood red.
Yeah, I do too.
Blood.
Okay,
that was okay. Yeah.
She was exercised.
Yeah, she got her cardio. She did her exercising routine.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back and read the book. Well, when I have time to read books. That'd be interesting.
Kitty Wynn. Never heard of Kitty Wynn.
I don't know. She looked a little familiar.
Jason Miller, phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm.
A tortured performance.
Linda
just
Blair.
Right. Amazing child performance. Asked of someone of that age.
I think Peter Masterson, that might be the father of Mary Stuart Masterson. I think. I could be wrong.
This music is really uncomfortable.
And Mercedes McCambridge.
Well, what do you want, a theme song at the end, sung by the Ray Conniff singers or something?
No, I don't know.
Celine Dion.
Celine Dion.
Maybe just like some soothing, on. Like, you know, choir music instead of like really intense.
Well, here you go.
Now we're okay.
You got your tubular bells.
Dick Smith. Oh, my gosh.
Hey, Dick
Took
Smith.
Makeup to a different level.
Special effects.
Marcel, get it, Marcel.
Great job. Great production design. I believed every bit of those environments. Great assistant directing. I believed all the people in those spaces.
I think I really admire the lettering design of this. I think it's interesting that the font has very little spacing between letters.
Hmm.
I don't know. I saw that documentary Helvetica, and ever since then, I've been like really analyzing fonts used for things.
I got to see that.
But there is just like
Jack Nitzsche. Jack Nitzsche did additional music.
Nitzsche. Yeah, did some...
A rock sequence. Oh, the bone.
So it really was in Iraq, yeah? Was it? No, or are they just calling it the Iraq sequence?
I think they went on location, from what I know. I can't say 100% sure, but I believe that it was, like everything else, done as real as possible. So I'm sure they went on location to Iraq. Iraq, Iraq.
Iraq.
Potato, potato.
It's Iraq.
Iraq?
Iraq.
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 Sound design.
If you're in Michigan, it's Iraq.
Yeah, this Tubular Bells was definitely a hit on the radio back in 70s.
Yeah. That's so strange. That's so
weird.
That's
the one you always have problems with in soundtracks. They include everything from the Exorcist movie, but Tubular Bells, if you ever try to get soundtracks from this thing. They have rights issues with Tubular Bells for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's always a thing that they leave off of everything. That's the one thing you want to hear. That's what reminds you of The Exorcist. I have some. I have like Lalo Schifrin's original score, and some other stuff music-wise. And you never can get Tubular Bells on it.
Probably because, well, who knows? He just retained.
I'm like, guys, it's the one thing I'm after. What else?
Then you have to get the Mike Oldfield album or a CD now. I'm sure it's available there.
Nice mastering.
Yes, yes.
For Blu-ray. This is a Blu-ray color credit. Actually,
yeah. Now, this is not what they did when they did French Connection.
No, that's a huge controversy. Which
Roisman was not involved in, but that's a French Connection.
I've never seen it, so I can't comment on it.
Have you ever seen the original?
No, actually.
Oh, French. I have to see it again. I've seen it a few times recently, and I thought it was pretty cool. And the last time I saw it, I was like,
I would like to see it just to see if it has that documentary feel that The Exorcist has. That would be a freaking
No. More of a documentary feel than this. Totally more of a documentary feel. Mm. Oh, you think this is realistic? This is a lot of control camera movements.
Oh.
French Connection's a little
like New Wave type stuff?
No, not that bad, okay. But definitely rough around the edges. Definitely gritty. So, what language are we speaking now?
Japanese.
That's Korean.
No, that's not Korean.
No, it's not? What is it?
No, it might be because of the little circles.
Oh, that's right.
No, that's Thai.
That's
Thai. For sure.
Heidi knows these things.
Well, I think the first one might have been
Chinese.
She works
for the UN or something?
That first one might have been Chinese. No. Let me see what the next one is. That's Korean. For sure. That's 100% Korean. I think the first one was Chinese, then it was Thai. This is Korean, so probably Japanese will be next.
For your listeners at home, they have this queued up and synced up. This will be...
Oh, no.
I don't know what this is.
Armenian?
Turkish?
Amaran.
I think it's Turkish.
Hospital.
These are the warnings about, not copying and all that kind of stuff.
And all the different languages for the global distribution.
The copyright proprietor has licensed this optical disc to blah, 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 blah.
But may I say that just for 1973, I can't think of another film being as extreme that's a big studio picture done a ways back as The Exorcist. I think that takes the cake for something that is, how did you get that done in that time frame? With that explicit intensity,
it took pardon the expression, it took balls, basically.
Friedkin
at the time had them. I'm not saying they didn't have them later, but really he had the capital
after
essentially
French Connection.
After French Connection, after
he was the
all
hot
that,
property.
Absolutely, he had totally had the capital to do that, and it kudos to him that he just went. He said, "This is however it wound up."
So that would be an interesting talk to look at directors that had an incredible commercial success. The film after that is the one they had the keys to the kingdom for, and what they did.
Well, because after this, he did Sorcerer, right?
I don't know Friedkin's career that well.
Please stand by.
But I was going to say that this actually reminds me a lot, not in story or plot or any way, but in like impact and in when it came out and in as far as like a progressive type of a film. It reminds me a lot of Psycho. It's just as like a newer, as a more an original storytelling style, building suspense, showing you things, not showing you things, being really successful. And critically acclaimed. I think it kind of almost, of different generations, but I think it kind of like follows along that same plane.
Yeah, Psycho did scare everyone, poopoo-less when it came out, and that was, 59, Psycho? 60.
I think it was 60, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
So for that time frame, yeah, it was pretty much The Exorcist of its day.
Right, yeah. It was just like a generational.
Context-wise.
Mm-hmm. And in the same way this was. Yeah, Sorcerer was the film after that. Then he did...
I've never heard of it.
Oh, that's with Roy Scheider. It was a remake of Henry Clouzot's The Wages of Fear. Mm. Oh, it's where basically four men in South America have to carry nitroglycerin across the jungle. Oh, and it's out there. It's real interesting. I don't know how successful it is. I think it's about 75% successful, but it was already kind of extending itself as to what was possible. And then after that, he did The Brink's Job, and then he did Cruising. So very eclectic.
He also directed Barbara Streisand's Somewhere video, just so you know.
That was later.
That was later.
And then, of course, he did To Live and Die in L.A. So anyway, good film. So go back to the Academy Awards. This beat, The Sting beat out The Exorcist for Best Picture, and The Sting kind of swept the Academy Awards along with other
things. It's much more an Academy-friendly film.
Yeah. Well, it got an acknowledged for sound and for... For the screenplay, which was cool.
It was a phenomenon. I mean, Exorcist was a phenomenon. You look at the footage of the lines around the blocks, the frenzy, the buzz, the paranoia that was all came with this event film. Oh, I don't think it's been equaled.
Yeah.
But to me, it's a character film. And also to me, I really enjoy everything leading up to what happens in Reagan's room at the end. I love everything that happens before it for foundational film storytelling. I just find it wonderful. So,
well, that's, but what's great is that, you know, once they go into the room, mm-hmm. they're in the room,
and I love it. No holds barred, and then it just all goes.
And it's in there, and we only leave when they leave, and that's the whole thing. Mm, is everything
we're with them.
Everything leads to the exorcism itself being in there, and mm-hmm. because otherwise there's cross cutting and this and that, but it's just like it's in there, and we are in there with them. So,
the more I say it, the more I admire the structure of the screenplay, the more I admire the directing and mm-hmm. the ensemble acting work.
Heidi?
I just, I actually really enjoyed watching this again today. It had been a while since I had, and, you know, it's a little gloomy of a day today outside the beautiful Film Grok studio, and I feel like it all kind of came together, and I'm in a place with it that I haven't been in a long time. I'm going to be thinking about this movie for the rest of the day. But it's an excellent film. It did its job, obviously. I'm not going to be able to shake it from my mind for the rest of the day.
Mm. It'll be there.
I'm going to be questioning, you know, good and evil and faith and relationships.
That's a wonderful point that I also took out of this film. I'm Christian, so I watched this, and it really made me assess some things and emotionally. And I said, that's a great effect that when a film can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm not a Christian.
Mm-hmm. I'm not either.
I'm actually Jewish by being raised or born, mm-hmm. but I'm not all that religious. But I look at this and I go like, I don't think it necessarily makes me think, yes, it exists in this world, but definitely it shows the what I really appreciate and respect is it shows the operating of faith, how this demanded these characters to absolutely you had to have faith, and they could totally freak out and run the other way, but they said, I now have to believe so completely, not only do I have to believe that, you know, the devil exists, but mm-hmm. that God exists and that mm-hmm. God yeah. will protect me and God will be on my side. And that's the whole thing of faith. You know, you never get the, mm-hmm. yes, I am. That's what faith is all about. And mm-hmm. then they absolutely had to go into it, both of them, Father Marin and Father Karras, and have that faith. It was all about truly what is the one thing that will truly have to test your faith.
I think the films even open up to people who don't have a religious faith. But I think mm-hmm. faith exists in everybody, whether or not you have any sort of religious connotation. It's just believing in something, whether it's believing in someone you're close to or, you know, and I think actually the mother has a lot of faith in this. She's faith in her daughter. You know, she's faith in this love and this relationship with them, and she's willing to go to any length to bring her back, you know, even if it means crossing over into things she doesn't believe in or she hasn't really conceptualized, she'll try it. So, yeah. I mean, like I said, I'll probably be thinking about this all day.
That's the effect I've noticed that people have with this film. It gets under their skin. And as you said, whether they have a personal spiritual conviction or not, blah, 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 blah. But this film, and it's held up, and it is 37 years ago, it still has the same effect. That's a great work, is that it gets under your skin. Mm-hmm. That's the success of this movie.
Quite literally, it got under Reagan's skin.
It totally got under Reagan's
skin. More than get under it.
It broke through it.
So is this the scariest film of all time? I think it's pretty damn close.
Oh, probably close.
I dropped the D word.
Uh-oh. Now we're talking about religion when the D word's thrown around.
I think it could be, for a scary movie, it could be one of the most unsettling.
I think it's exceedingly unsettling.
Yeah. It depends on what scares you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like my friend, my Catholic friend, you know, this is very frightening to her, and she wanted to show it to me. I think to her, it definitely is the scariest film, you know, because it incorporates something that was already existing in her psyche. So,
right.
And exploits that. But I can't.
I mean, I think Ishtar runs a close second.
I can't imagine most people not being a little bit creeped out by this movie, though. Even if you're the kind of person who doesn't get affected.
Even if you're not spiritually connected, what happens to a child? What happens to a child in this movie is enough to be unsettled by.
What happens to a child, to a mother, to a person,
to an old man, to a priest, just the
children thing I was talking.
Well,
about.
But even beyond the children, well. Yeah, beyond the children thing. Just on a plain what happens to reality level, because reality is really overturned by this event. I mean, you have everyone. You have a child. You have an old man. You have a father. You have the spectrum of things. It just really challenges it completely. in every kind of way.
And in the CG age, the old school effects, I think, held up very nicely.
Oh, they look fantastic. Even on the Blu-ray transfer.
Yes.
Yep, they really hold up.
Yep.
You know, very good.
Okay, great. And on that note,
happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everybody. This has been Serge Dalpierre,
Tim McMillan,
and
Heidi Hilliker.
And good night.